So I'm sitting here on a couch with two other guys, which can mean only one thing. And that means it's time.
It means a lot of things, actually.
To me, at least.
Okay.
It means only one thing, and that is it's time for another episode of Macross Speaker Podcast. And to my right, I have...
Adrian.
To my left, I have...
Richard.
And seeing, apart from this sexy sandwich on the couch, we have...
Renato.
And with you, as always, the sometimes captain of this podcast, Gwyn Campbell. And it's been a while, but welcome back, everyone. There's been a lot going on in the Macross world over the past couple of months. Things have kind of kicked it up a notch. There was that kind of dip after the Wings of Farewell.
Right.
And then there was really nothing on the cards for the 30th anniversary. And all of a sudden, boom, things have started to take off.
When did the Wings of Farewell come out?
That it was almost a year ago. That was the end of
February. It was February, right.
It was the end of February.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess people took a break for a while.
Yeah. So, but look, before we get into that, there's this new segment I want to try out, which is what you've been watching. Because, you know, I think we're all, to some extent, anime fans. Although these days, that term has a bit more of a negative connotation to it than I'd like it to. But, you know, I'm sure we don't all just sit around watching nothing but Macross. I'm interested in what everyone's been watching. So I'd like to hear from each of you what you've watched recently. It doesn't have to be a new show, but just share with the listeners what you've watched as of late. Adrian, you want to go first?
Recently in negative connotation? I mean, where have you been?
I've been in Japan, man. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah.
Anime is so cool in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Anime is so cool.
Yeah. Cool in Japan, man.
Okay.
Come on,
cool.
I listen to Patrick Macias. Anyway.
Yes, because anime is on 24 hours a day here.
And everybody's into it. Everybody.
Yeah,
girls? Not for kids.
Not for kids, man. Talking about anime.
He just took it back a generation. All right, what have you been watching?
Okay. Well, I know you'll get into this in more detail, but today I got my Berserk cherry popped. We went and saw the new Berserk movie, and though it is an old manga, not old, but a more classic manga,
Lengthy, still going, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Still going, and there's an anime series I've never seen. Not that I never wanted to, I just don't have the time. Or I'm not particularly interested in, like, swords and armor anime, but it was alright, even though it was a retelling, right?
Yeah, yeah, it was basically the first of a trilogy, which basically rehashes the anime series.
So going in knowing that much, the story was fine. Overall, I was not impressed with the CG.
Oh no!
The 2D animation was decent, but for a feature-length film, it was way under the bar. I'll just put it that way, and you can go on about that.
How about the music?
Music was all right. It didn't stand out for anything, but it was there. And it seemed more to me, it just seemed like they were reaching out more towards the Fujoshi audience opposed to anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, they did recast the two leads a little younger.
Like I said earlier, it was almost like watching Alto and Mihail half the time. And then there's only 5 minutes of a good story through the whole time I was there. But other than that, recently I went back home for Christmas and New Year's, and I picked up first and second season of Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. Starting to watch that. It's somewhat interesting so far, but
how far in are you?
3 episodes.
Oh, well, okay.
Okay. But anything production ID, well, anything that is done by Production IG, they all have that same color palette.
Yeah.
And they all have that same style. So until it gets better, I really don't see anything interesting because it's just another Production IG thing. And the intro is atrocious.
Oh, the CG intro?
It's atrocious.
There's a story behind that. I don't recall all of it, but it wasn't originally supposed to be CG. They outsourced that at the last minute. And they change it after a few episodes.
It looks like a very low budget
PS1 era.
It looks like a Dead or Alive 2 openings like animation, but
that sounds good.
A few corners are cut.
Okay,
so that's okay. I'm looking forward to catching up on that because a lot of people like it.
Yep.
And I loathe Ghost in the Shell movies done by Oshii, or anything done by Oshii. So that includes Pat Labor, and you guys are boring.
I'm constraining my rage here.
Yeah, just like Oshii would if he actually made an action movie.
I'm going to set a basset hound on you, I swear.
Can I say something funny about Oshii?
Go for it.
If you look at any of his interviews, you'll hear the sound is always really, really noisy in the background.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because his voice is so low that they have to really pump up the volumes on the microphones to try and catch anything of what he says.
Well, that's what Gwen has to do when I speak on the podcast.
Oh. So yeah, you are so, more than him, yeah. More than he is himself.
Okay.
You are Oshii.
Other than that, I've caught a few things. I'm highly recommending Koi Sento to anybody that can see it.
It's very, yeah.
Because of, if you want to see good 3D character animation trying to look 2D, watch Koi Sento. It'll only take 25 minutes of your day.
It looks amazing.
And you saw a crappy stream.
Yeah, I dug it up on Amazon. It is about 3,600 new. But uh-huh. I'm sure you could find it cheaper secondhand on Blu-ray.
Yeah, I mean, we'd go down the road and find it.
Like, it's supposed to be 5,000.
Then
it doesn't look like 3D CG. Mm. It looks like somebody just did it hand-drawn.
Yeah, that's quite impressed. By the team that did Freedom. So, or part of the team.
Yeah, but don't use that as a recommendation. It doesn't look anything like Freedom.
No, it doesn't, because it doesn't reflect Akira. So, anyways, going on.
That's not what I meant.
Yes, I know, I'm the hater, but... the one thing I have seen when I went back home and I saw it in the theater was the high octane, everybody's like clamoring about it. Red Line. Redline, all I can say, it's very well made.
Okay, this is good.
Character designs, and not just the main characters, but all the sub-characters. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of detail, like you would see in old animation.
Okay.
Like you would see in, like, for example, Akira. Right,
that's two positives in a row, you know, here. This is right. A new record. Keep
okay. On. Also, it should win some kind of award just based on sound alone.
Yeah.
The sound mixing in Redline is hands down the best I've heard in over a decade. Foreign animation, foreign or domestic. Right?
Okay.
Now,
no, I'm going to cut the podcast here, so go ahead.
But Redline is still exactly what everybody hates about anime right now.
It's, who's everybody?
Colony Drop.
Everybody knows who everybody is. Yeah. Oh, Japanese anime fans don't give a shit about Redline. Didn't absolutely. Do shit here.
Right? Oh, yeah, I totally
yeah,
agree.
I saw it on opening day here at 10:30 in the morning. They were giving out film strips to commemorate it as you walked into the cinema. Cinema was maybe half full, two-thirds max. And this is even with Kimutaku in it. And I know we don't have any Kimutaku fans here. I am not one either, but... Yeah, with the huge fan base he has, you'd think they'd promote it. As he, you know, he's in it, come and see it.
They well, didn't. You can't see him in it.
No, but...
His whole appeal is...
He was a major promotional point in Howl's Moving Castle.
Right.
They really pumped the fact he was in that movie. And they yet Redline got no advertising. Got no advertising, period.
I don't know. People went to see Howl just because it was Ghibli, not because of...
I know a lot of people who saw it because of Kimetsu.
It's more marketable, but it's not why people saw it.
Well, yeah, but it's a marketing point, which they... Well,
you're trying to dilute my opinion of Howl. Oh, really? You're trying to take this over. I want to say what I want to say. Stop now.
Go ahead. Yeah. Say it.
Back to the main thing is, regardless of all the good things about it, it doesn't make it a good animated feature, because it's the same shit everyone's been complaining about. It's a love story with the same thing you see in every anime, It's just covered with high octane racing and some stupid subplot Evangelion fucking secret weapon thing that has no point in ever being in the goddamn story, nor does it make it any more interesting because the mechanic made that movie interesting.
Yeah, no, but it did give us an excuse to have one of the cars transform into a female robot with a female driver in each breast. So I give the Beast a pass.
Hey, you can watch Mazen Kaiser Skull and be content with that. But I like that part too. But all the ranting and raving about how great Redline is, it's just a bunch of anime critics just trying to say it's something that it's not, but it's exactly what they hate.
Anime Redline, okay, is just
you've
anime...
seen it, right?
Yeah, yeah, I saw it. I saw it before it came out because I was went to one of those press screenings.
Excuse me.
Yeah, yeah. I was watching it on the way here on my PSP. So
that doesn't count. Anyway, yeah.
Anyway, forgot my point. Thank you very much. Please move on.
Richard,
it's anime for anime's sake. That's what I was gonna say.
Oh, it's anime.
It's anime for anime's sake.
All right, we'll
all they
want to
do is they want
to
show they can do this. And I'm glad that they did.
Well, they could have done it without doing the love story and the flashback and the girl crying and then the meeting back.
Movie. Yeah.
But they had to put it in there. And you can't say, well, they had to do it to sell toys or they had to do it to do this. Redline is totally outside the rule of having to do anime. They did it on their own. They didn't need to have it in there. They could have just been 100% original. They still used all the shit that people hate. But everyone that hates that shit is ignoring it and just going, no, man, it's fucking the best thing since fucking the
90s. They're probably doing it as a kind of homage or something. I don't know.
If they were doing that, then those people that love it so much should actually say the negative things about it is they still hung on to all those tropes.
Well, you and I talked about this a couple of days ago, actually.
Yeah.
In far more detail. Yeah. So, but I'm just going to say I agree with all of the points that you've made, even the negative points. I do agree with that. But I don't think it takes away from the entertainment value, and that's all that this movie wanted to do.
No,
just be entertaining.
I'm going to buy this movie on the sound alone and the actual love they put into producing this movie.
Then he's going to buy a sound system.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got the TV and I got the PS3 now, so all I got to do is
get the sound
level
system
up a little bit more. But at the same time, I don't like it when people go and rant and rave about something and saying it's totally something that's, you know, out of left field when it's the same shit that's, whether
it's shit that no one's seen in 10 years, really. That's
right, that's what it is, really.
What?
I mean, it's not...
it's the same shit, but it's shit that people haven't seen in years.
Oh, yeah,
it's a break from what's popular now.
Oh, like Highlander the Animation. Or...
Oops, sorry.
Like Highlander the Animation or any other 20 titles that Madhouse has put over in the last 12 years that have failed.
In Japan.
Oh, yes.
The Americans.
They're on Spike TV now, but those don't count.
Americans
right?
really like Supernatural and X-Men and Iron Man. And all
that was all about Afro Samurai. I mean, that thing made a lot of money.
You guys are like proving my case. I don't even have to name these titles.
But anyways.
But they don't exist, but you have a library of them all.
Well... I'm going to move on to me.
Yeah, it's your turn.
Thank you. And so, yeah, Berserk, the movie, first in a trilogy. It was great to see it in the big screen, but there were two major disappointments I had. The first being that the new scenes I was really looking forward to turned out to be the weakest. With a bigger budget, there was a lot of advertising focused around the fact that there were going to be these huge battles, like castle sieges and stuff like that. And yet, whenever it had one of those scenes, it would switch the animation style to pretty much CG models with cell shading. So suddenly everyone looked generic. Everyone had the same motion animation. It was just not good. But then the minute those huge battles finished, it went back to traditional 2D animation, which was really, really good. I really liked it.
Well, you got to consider it. I wouldn't call it animation. It was motion capture.
That's true.
You know, that's like rotoscope, like
rotoscoping.
Yeah. Animation. Well, they use the same motion capture for like 80% of the characters. The casting skewed a bit younger. The only other major disappointment I had with it was that having rewatched the first couple of episodes of the series the night before to prepare, it was unbelievably similar. The I'm not joking when I say it is a remake of the animation series. Like, there were lines, line for line, identical, just being read by different voice actors.
But, well, and those were probably the same as in the comics,
in the
right?
comics, probably, mm-hmm. yeah. But, I mean, when I'm listening to a conversation and I know not what's coming, but the exact lines that are coming, that's a step too far, in my opinion. But it was good to see on the big screen, and they're churning these out. The next one's due out in June. And then the next one's due out by next winter.
Well, yeah, but the Evangelion new movies were all supposed to be out in 1 year, too.
But this had, like, an extensive trailer. With a lot of, so I think they've pretty much finished the second one.
Huh.
Yeah, well, you never know. Yeah. Red Lion was also in production for 7 years.
7 glorious years. But I watched that. Apart from that, I finally got around to watching the 2006 series Towards the Terror, which kind of caught me by surprise. I'm, as you guys know, I like owning the anime I watch. I'm not a huge fan of streaming. And all of the streaming services, like Hulu and whatnot, while they've become a little more available recently, they're not normally available in Japan. So
right.
I tend to either rent or buy, and I tend to pick up a lot of stuff from, Right Stuff sales when I can. So I found this at the Right Stuff for, $15 maybe. And I remember seeing it at the Tokyo International Anime Fair. Maybe 2005, they had a poster up for it, I think, saying it was coming.
Yeah.
And just, I'd seen the original movie from the 80s. I was aware of the show. It piqued my interest, but I finally sat down and watched it. And it's quality. High standard of animation throughout. Much better storyline than the movie, which, it's like comparing X the series to X the movie,
Yeah.
But yeah, it's by the original artist who... What's her name again?
Takemiya Keiko.
Thank you. Mm. Names. I don't do them.
Well, she's the dean of the Faculty of Manga at Kyoto Seiki University.
Right. But yeah, it wraps the story up pretty decently. It's all logical. It's a slower moving series. I mean, I recommend it for people who kind of like Crest of the Stars, Banner of the Stars sort of thing. Even though it's about psychics in space, it's kind of slow moving. But when there is action, it's really good. And yeah, I mean, I powered through 26 episodes in a day.
Somebody wrote an academic essay on that.
On the manga or?
On the new series and the movie. And I don't remember, but I think they compared it.
Mm-hmm.
You get Mechademia, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I haven't.
It's in there.
Okay.
It's in one of the more recent volumes. And I was reading it just by accident. I was looking through one of those books, and I found it, and I was like, oh, this is what Gwyn was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that you said the series was better than the movie, right?
Yes, by far.
He said the movie is better than the series, I think.
Is why we don't listen to academics, kids.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if they're comparing the original manga, which I haven't read, and I intend to
He went into a bit more... depth, like where Takemiya got her ideas from.
Okay.
And some of the characters are named after some other sci-fi characters or mm-hmm, something.
That's true.
I have to go back and read it.
Well, I mean, I just can't see how you could capture that story in a single movie anyway. I mean, it was gorgeously animated, but I had no idea what the hell was going on. It was just a visual kind of feast. But the TV series, I definitely recommend it if you're into serious... kind of old school sci-fi.
Yeah, me too. It was something I was wanted to check out for quite a while now because I was actually working at that university while it was on.
Mm-hmm.
And there were posters all over it because they have students of animation and, Professor Takemiya wanted to get everyone involved. And so she was really heavily promoting the production of it. Mm. And I'm sure she was like inviting some students to help out somehow. So, okay. Yeah, definitely I want to... check that out.
So apart from that, I've been watching a 6-part OVA, another Right Stuff deal, which was called, I think it was Save My Blue Earth SOS.
Oh, yeah.
And I got it because it was $9.99 in a cardboard box, yeah. And it's kind of completely caught me left field. It's great.
Mm.
Like, if you're into retrofuturism,
mm-hmm.
whether it be something like Giant Robo or kind of the steampunky elements from Last Exile... it's really, really that kind of...
Oh, never mind, go ahead. It's a giant robo. I was like, I thought he was just giving me shit.
No, I'm completely serious. Like, it's just this really gorgeous, gorgeously animated show.
If you like Johnny Sokol and his flying robot.
Then, yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, I want to know the story about how this got funded, because it's appealing in the same way as Mars Attacks kind of appealed to people who like old schlocky sci-fi, but without so much schlock, just more of nostalgia. Some really great retro designs, like, you know, people with jetpacks, hover cars, you know, laser guns that fire lightning, just really, really cool adventure kind of stuff. And if you can see it, I definitely recommend it. The quality's just unbelievably high.
And this is a TV series. Was it a TV series?
It was OVA.
Well, they broadcast it on TV.
Right.
So this came out at the height. This was from Moe Animation.
So, Please Save My Earth, right?
No. That's old.
Save My Blue Earth SOS. Yeah.
Save My Blue Earth SOS.
Oh, that's different? I thought you were talking about something else.
No, I thought that's what it was when I saw it on the shelf. Because I'm like, can I borrow it? I want to see Please Save My Earth. He goes, no, it's not that. Huh. I saw that spaceship.
And the box art's terrible. I mean, it looks like some generic, really badly animated show, but it's actually pretty damn good.
But, I mean, it was a show, like, made and produced at the height of the Moe era.
Right. So, and I would really love to know how it got financed. It's kind of like, you know, they've announced, I think it is in March or May, there's a show coming out called Ozma, which is nothing to do with Macross Frontier, unfortunately. It's a Matsumoto Leiji series, 6 episodes, some kind of TV station's anniversary series. They punt this huge budget into it for 6 episodes. I just don't get who they're appealing to or where they think they're going to get money from, because you can't get commercial revenue or...
It's the same as Redline.
Or figure eight. Well, yeah, true. But, yeah, good show. But, Richard, moving on.
Oh, well, mine's going to be pretty short and dull. I've just been watching 2 things recently. I have been watching Mospita again, because one of my friends had never heard of it, but got really intrigued by the staff credits.
Hmm.
Because it has Yoshitaka Amano, it's got Joe Hisaishi doing the music, it's got all of these really great people.
Right.
So she wanted to see it, so we've been watching it. We're about 15 episodes in. And it's goofy. It's very goofy.
That's like saying, yeah, let's watch Ocean's 12.
Right, yeah.
It's got all these people in it.
Right,
but it's nothing like Ocean's 11.
And I've also been watching another goofy show, Bodacious Space Pirates.
I've heard good things about that. That's Studio Satellite.
Yeah, and I'm not sure it's going anywhere. Like this, I'm not sure the story is going anywhere.
Excuse me.
It's
Bodacious, meaning like...
No.
Is that the Japanese sanctioned English title? Or the
that is the Japanese...
It's Moretsu.
Moretsu.
Yeah, I knew the title.
Which
Japanese.
Moretsu is kind of 90s slang, isn't it?
He wasn't born in the 90s, so yeah. Okay.
So I thought it was kind of perfect, but no, I'm really only watching that because Momorio Clover Z does the theme song.
You're not into them too.
Oh, I love them. What are you talking about? They're awesome.
So is it a decent enough show to watch?
It's okay. I've only watched like the first couple episodes. It's all right. I'm not. It's going to be 26 episodes, so a lot can change between.
Can you give us a basic premise? Very basic.
It's like
Star Trek.
No, it's they're kind of like privateers. It's like England a long time ago, except of course space, where you got a pirate license to actually go and attack
innocent civilians.
No, enemy ships.
Okay.
So that you could plunder enemy ships if you felt like it. And so there's a girl who, her parents were both really great pirates, and her father dies.
Took that tack with it. Okay.
Yeah, so that means that she becomes the captain of the pirate ship.
There's a little bit of Plastic Little in there.
Yes, there is. Yes.
Nice.
Upon which Adrian's face sprung to life.
Well, so there's breasts.
But it is less bodacious than Plastic Little.
We need to retitle Plastic Little then to Bodacious Little.
Right. Well, I just thought Plastic Nipple, The Adventures of Captain Tits was the best title.
On that note, Renato.
Actually, that reminded me. I did watch Bodacious Pirates?
What was that? Bodacious Space Pirates?
Space Pirates.
You enjoyed it so much you forgot the name.
Yeah, it was really, really boring. I'm sorry to say.
Okay.
I only saw that one episode. I don't know what number episode it was. It was on TV last week, and
okay, I haven't gotten that.
Kind of. That's why I said Star Trek, because it just felt like Star Trek to me. It's just people talking on the bridge of a spaceship for 30 minutes, and that was it. Nothing happened.
Great opening and ending song, though.
And there I would have to disagree, too, because it was kind of like really noisy J techno. And I don't know, Marmaria Clover. I heard of them just recently. I didn't know who they were until quite recently. But
they
yeah.
rock.
Has anyone else? Oh, sorry. Was there anything else you'd been?
Yeah, there's lots of things I want to say.
Oh, hit me.
number one, more importantly, Rinne no Lagrange. Has everyone heard of that show? Probably not.
I've heard of the name.
Okay, well, it's another production IG, but it's not production IG like. It's really, really cool. I've been following it since before it started because I was invited to an event to promote it. And
wait, what?
Well, I've written stuff about it. Please go to the website or whatever. It's a
conflict of interest.
Conflict of interest, yeah. So I'm just going to say it's got robot designs by Nissan, and it's got opening song by that woman you like.
Maya?
No. Oh, the other one. Megumi, yeah.
Megumi Nakajima does the opening.
Megumi Nakajima.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you
she
know
does the opening.
Yeah, she does the music video where it's a fresh hair, short, cut hair.
Alright, I know what I'm doing hair. When we're finished recording.
YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, if you go to Akihabara, they have a display on it now.
Okay.
They've got all the Genga and the Doga and stuff. And okay. They've got lots of designs. They've got the big robot there.
Okay.
But the most intriguing thing about it, for me, is that they got the city of Kamogawa in Chiba Prefecture to actually kind of do a collaboration. So that they get more tourism revenue, because it's actually set in that city. So it's quite interesting. I'm really interested to see how this is all going to pan out, like in the real world. They the city of Kamogawa has actually sent out some notices to citizens saying, "Hey, you can be a part of the Jersey Group, which is like this club that the main characters are in, and basically they want to help people in need, which is quite interesting. You know that fans can be not just consumers, but they can actively partake in revitalizing the region and society. It goes way beyond what the actual story of the show is. It really doesn't matter. It's just aliens come and attack Earth, and girls try and pilot robots to defend their city. That's it. But really, what is most intriguing is the actual real-life aspect of it.
No, that's interesting. I mean, that takes to another level what I think I've mentioned before, which was, you know, like in the case of Macross, the reason I always like talking about it is because it's a very, very active and almost like a living fandom. And you know, there's the event Adrian and I went to, which, you know, last year, which they recorded all of us chanting, which then went into, you know, a song which ended up in the next Frontier movie.
Right.
You know, so there's that feeling that, yes, fans get screwed over for prices and whatnot here, but there's that pride among a lot of fans that we support this, but we do get back from it. We're kind of
we
actively participate.
We are part of something. Yeah.
And this is taking to the next level, what you're saying, to the local community.
Yeah, right. Community, society. It's you know, something that had been troubling me for a long time was that fandom in general is kind of given this negative connotation that, you know, they're all just hikikomori and otaku and not contributing anything to society. But this is if this pans out well.
Talk about the show. Yeah.
Right. Okay. If it pans out well, then it might give fandom a more positive image, certainly, and more contributing to society.
Now, the fact that you live here and you care about these areas. I mean, is that why you're watching it? Because doesn't you're not saying the show's any good.
I'm not saying the show's any good, but I do enjoy the show, though, having seen it.
Disclaimer. I mean, it's only a box quote. I'm not saying the show's any good, Renata.
It's only on the third or fourth episode now, and I don't really like new anime to begin with, and I'm finding it enjoyable.
And by new, we mean post-1986.
Post-2000. and I find it quite enjoyable, so that's as big a letter of recommendation you're ever going to get. Because I'm watching also Aquarian Evil, and that's...
So I was going to ask you that, because I've watched two episodes now.
And?
Well...
There you go. Okay, see, that's all you can say.
I was like, wow, they put a lot of that Macross Frontier money into this show. It looks really pretty. And the action is really smooth. But granted, I would want to give it the chance of sitting down and watching it from episode one. I've just caught two episodes randomly, you know, on Saturday nights. What there was really high quality animation from a technical level standpoint for a TV series. I can't really speak for the characters or plot, but from what I initially saw, I was kind of like, But they brought back the main character from the first show, which I hated, but now kind of older and meaner, which is like, well, at least he's not a young, you know, punk with a burning soul. but yeah. Have you seen any of Aquarian Evil?
No, I haven't. I never watched the original Aquarian. No, okay. I still haven't watched it, I should say.
Great opening song.
Yeah, no, I have the album.
Yes.
The mini album.
Yeah, I think that's it. Oh, Guilty Crown.
Oh, we couldn't go anywhere without Guilty some Guilty Crown.
Crown.
which is on a lot of score shopfront TVs in Akiba.
It is. I don't know, I can't say I like it, but I'm intrigued enough to...
Well, you've told us you can't say you like anything made after 2000.
Right. But I'm intrigued enough to keep watching it week after week, so...
Mm-hmm.
And this is really the height of my anime watching, because I haven't seen actually airing anime since...
Frontier.
Yeah, since Frontier. I haven't actually watched any regularly. But that's also because they're on so late that I have to record
them.
And I only got a PS3 to record it. Like a few months ago.
But as Andrew said, you can't be called a Scrooge because you like Orgus.
Whatever that means. I don't really get that.
Because that show's pretty odd.
Okay.
But it's not current anime, and that's what I meant.
Alright, so on that note...
why don't you talk about the trailer for Cyborg... Re-Cyborg 009.
It's kind of
and how his power is just being black.
We've passed all that.
There's one thing you left out.
Okay.
Since we do have a special guest later on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yamato Resurrection Director's Cut.
We did go and see that in the movies as well. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
All right. It's significantly better than the original cut. It's still got some poor CG for the enemies. It's got a different ending that makes way more sense and sets things up for a potential series or sequel. Although series-wise, we're now getting Yamato 2199 in the form of 7 movies instead. The soundtrack, they put in like a lot of old school Yamato music in it. They put in all the old sound effects back into it. And they also tightened it up. So despite having a new ending, it's actually 15, 20 minutes shorter. That's because the old ending was really drawn out.
Well, Yamato movies should be like 2.5 or 3 hours, I think.
Have you seen the original cut?
No, I haven't.
The Resurrection?
No,
okay.
No.
I haven't seen the original cut. But
I
went
B
with
forever, though.
I went with them to see this with Tim Eldred, Anton, and Gwyn. And
Anton, in Russia, we don't watch movies; we drink.
We drink and act out and sing in the theater.
And sing the theme song in the middle of cinema on premiere night. Yes. Anyway.
So I never saw the original cut, and from you and from another person, a friend of ours in the industry, said it wasn't very good.
Right.
But I don't really care what people think. I want to see it myself. So I went along, and I actually enjoyed it.
Which...
Opposed to... I mean, yes, it had low-grade CG, 3D space battles that aren't as bad as you describe. The 2D animation was horrible.
So I had no issue with the 2D.
No, no. The only time the 2D looked good was when there was a female character on screen.
And they cut out the one scene from the old cut where Yuki was naked, because, unfortunately.
Literally, they had character, and I think it had to do with the character designer, because all the secondary characters looked like they're straight out of American animated television shows from Fox Kids or something.
You invoked Ben 10, didn't you, last time?
That's what it was. I felt like I was watching Ben 10. Literally, there's these two twin, like, engineer guys, and they had the spikiest hair I've ever seen, and they look like they belonged on, Gundam, not Gundam, Voltron of the third universe, the third dimension universe. Even though that was all CG, it just didn't fit right. It was totally wrong for me. But I love the story. Mm. I love the ending. And, opposed to Redline, which had all these positives.
I knew there was a link here somewhere.
Well, you take Redline, which had all this high-grade quality in it. The resurrection cut for Yamato had a superior story over what Redline had to offer, but lower budget, lower quality, and the CG battles weren't that bad.
Well, what you're saying is, if only Yamato looked like Redline.
Oh, it would be fucking amazing.
Does anyone have tissues?
Seriously. if they could get that budget and they would have made that version, because I know Tim says differently. He likes the original cut.
How would you know this?
We haven't spoken to him yet.
We can't go back in time.
Well, there may be somebody out there that disagrees with me. But I would say if Resurrection had Redline's budget, and the ending that I saw opposed to what you've told me before, and the music and all that, probably the best anime to come out in a long time. For something that's, a revival.
Okay. Are you interested at all in seeing the new retelling in 2199?
Yeah, from the trailer, I mean, it actually looks better.
I'm looking forward to that.
But on the topic of of trailers, this is old news, but last October, November, we got an extended trailer for the upcoming reinterpretation of Cyborg 009.
Kenji Kamiyama.
Which is directed by Kenji Kamiyama, thank you, Joseph. The director of Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex. It seriously looks like, as you'd call it, a production IG show. But, kind of modern, slightly more realistic reimagining of Cyborg 009. I'm hanging to see this at cinema. I'm looking forward to this more than the next Berserk film. So, let's jump into some news. Because, as everyone's aware, the 30th anniversary has begun. And there's been a lot of bits and pieces that have gradually been coming to light. First of all, there was the logo.
Mm-hmm.
Two versions of which. I kind of like the second one, actually.
Oh, I didn't notice there were two.
That's really? That one's my avatar on Anime Ski now.
I've got the other one on my phone. I'll show it to you later. But there's a black version and a white version. The black one's different. Like, in between the 3 and the O is the SDF-1, the cannons. Separating the 3 and the O. It's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely kicked off, and the reason we know this is because everything...
website gets...
Well, we'll get to that, but pretty much everything Macross-related is suddenly coming up with the 30th anniversary logo. Like for the 15th anniversary, every single figure had the 15th anniversary.
It was just a sticker, though.
Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, this time it's actually in the package.
Back then, it was just reissued Bandai kits with stickers.
Right, yeah, it wasn't really a big thing, the 15th anniversary. I don't think there were any original products out there.
Dynamite 7?
Yeah. That didn't have the logo on it.
No, it didn't.
Well, one of the first things that's come to light is there may be a reprinting of the Macross Chronicle.
Yes. And I'm kind of excited about that.
Going from 50 issues to 80.
There will be a reprinting.
Well, there is a reprinting.
But it doesn't mean that'll actually...
Well, at the moment, there's a, six-issue test run in... Is it Nagasaki?
Hiroshima.
Oh, one of the bomb cities. Yeah.
It's not like they're doing
They're doing a test run, which is a pattern common for Diognes The Agostini?
The Agostini.
Which is a different publisher than published the original one.
It is, but it's still the same
format. But it's what they do. They did it for the for Yamato Fact Files. They did a test run in a different city for 8 issues. And the artwork in those was significantly different to what appeared in the official issues 1 to 8.
Oh, really? Well, it wasn't Tengen?
It was Tengen.
He redrew everything?
No, he didn't. This is a long story, and which will be up on starblazers.com recently. But some of the art was not provided, not published as intended. Let's put it that way. But I'll leave that to Tim Eldred over at starblazers.com to do. But, I mean, look, 30 issues of new content. I'm excited. Yeah. I'm not excited at the thought of A, buying it again.
Right.
Or B, sending it all back home. It's not
like
again.
Those 30 issues are going to be tacked at the end or anything like that.
No.
They're going to spread it out, which means you're going to have to buy everything all over again.
Well, look, I'm already getting the Gundam Fact File, which has gone
from... you're doing that!
They went from the earlier printing, which I didn't get,
which
thankfully.
I did.
At 150 issues, to now they're saying it's 180, but... considering that's 3.5 years, it'll probably end up being closer to 200.
Yeah, I can't see it finishing within 200.
Right. They and I'm getting the 60-issue Tale of Genji magazine.
Oh, jeez.
I'm not happy about spending buying 3 weekly magazines at nearly 600 yen each.
Yeah. No, I see where you're coming
from. Oh, this one's going to be weekly?
Macross Chronicle? Yeah.
Really?
Chronicle's going to be weekly now.
Wow.
It was bi-weekly before.
It's only 30 issues of new content split in among the old issues, which is, they did the same thing with the Evangelion Chronicles as well. Mm-hmm. But look, you know, more information, potentially more Macross too.
Yes.
Sato will be happy.
I'll be happy because I'm hoping they use the Macross Crusade... card games,
right?
That's all you got, man.
That's all I got for Macross 2.
It's right here. Look.
In the last two, I think the last.
Whose are those?
I don't know.
Well, Howard gave me those. Those are his extras.
Gave them to you. That's a whole box of cards.
Well,
that's
Howard is the pro. Macross Crusade.
Well, there's two Howards. There's two Howards in Osaka, and we're talking about both of them, but they're both named Howard.
There are 5 Macross 2 novels.
Well, yeah, but that's just old. But I mean, there's new... there's new illustrations.
Macross 2 material.
Oh,
new
okay.
illustrations.
Hey, look, it's Max. I've never seen him before.
Like, those aren't the cards.
Oh.
Hold on.
Shin, who cares about him?
I like him.
It's a huge box of cards, man.
Right. Hey, look, it's Miria. Is it just the same Max picture recolored?
No, here we
Let's
go.
Let's see.
See, oh, these ones are in the plastic. That's just in a box. So, like, we got new art of...
this should be a YouTube video.
What is it?
Metal Siren?
Metal Siren.
You forgot the name, man.
Because nobody likes the Metal Siren. It's just a
Metal nobody likes
Siren.
It.
Metal Siren.
It's just the Zeta Gundam.
And we know how much I love Hey, Wendy, are you wearing any underwear?
J2A
is.
It's a Gilgamesh. It's another Metal Siren.
It's another
Metal Siren. It's a Valkyrie 2.
It's the sap Valkyrie.
It's a Macross cannon.
It's a bird, it's a plane, it's a Metal Siren.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So yes, I'm
that
hoping...
looks pretty terrible.
That does look terrible. The Macross cannon
is terrible.
Looks terrible.
That is terrible. Man.
So is there any way of getting some of this art up on the site to show
people
what we're...
Yeah, scan the whole thing in.
It's so terrible it deserves a header saying Robotech the Shadow Chronicles. But anyways,
you know,
the fact that I would just love to see at least the full pictures and, you know, something bigger than a trading card.
Right.
Yeah. They're not going to use those.
Well, that and the fact that Tengen did do every single cover for all 50 issues. So we can hope there's a potential, you know, another 30 full pieces of Macross art there.
Yeah, well, if you watched the commercial for it, I mean, he clearly did the YF-29, which I think is going to be in issue 1.
Right.
That's the
so look,
lead.
And at the moment, a lot of people have been asking how they get it, and it is really limited to that city. I've confirmed with some Japanese fans, if you email Diagostini... Say it again for me.
Diagostini.
You've been watching TV commercials. And you email them saying you want to order it, you can order it directly from them for those issues, you know, just in case there's anything that turns out to be different about them than in the final official run.
Go ahead.
Otherwise, it's just a matter of waiting to see if they sell well enough. And why Hiroshima, I don't know.
The binders seem to be...
The binders are different. They're not, yeah.
They're big SDF-1,
aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. It's the picture of the... It's the Mikimoto picture with the SDF-1 and then Minmay.
From the launch ceremony.
Yeah, with a bunch of crap thrown in it.
Right. Okay, well, I mean, yeah, new content's always good. This is kind of like I expected with Macross Ace. I expected it to continue... through to the end of the 30th anniversary.
Macross Ace will continue in the future.
No, it won't. But New Type Ace might.
We're getting a reprint of the Chronicles instead. Yeah. Oh, well, Macross the First in New Type Ace has been getting really good, although next issue it's not going to be.
I've been really kind of disappointed with New Type Ace for the most part.
I thought the first two issues were quite good.
Well, the second issue was just a reprint of... like the second half of the beginning of the Mars chapter.
Oh, I just meant overall as a publication, not.
Okay.
Well, that's because
all I care about
Tiger and Bunny and stuff. Don't
right,
you?
Tiger and Bunny rocks.
Yeah. See, all I care about is the Macross stuff, and so
you're so old fashioned.
Yeah,
but what the hell are we talking about?
Macross Ace.
Yeah, Macross Ace. Macross Ace, we're going to get a reprinting of the Chronicle, which is not what I would have expected. But we'll probably know in the next, I'd say, few weeks, probably, whether or not. They'll give it a month, probably, to see how it goes.
So probably before you edit this and put it up, we'll know.
Boom, boom, boom.
No, sorry.
So, well, we're on the topic of new publications. There's a couple of new Tankobon due out.
Yeah, we've got Macross Plus Tack Name, which is kind of Nato says all that needs to be said.
The
about
definitive
it.
Version of Macross Plus, from what I've been.
Give
told.
Me that book, I'll redraw it for you.
Yeah, it's not very good. It's the same story as Macross Plus, done in kind of a shoujo style, and it's not great. And then we've got Macross Seventh Code coming out.
Seventh Chord.
Code. I'm the one who said chord originally, and I have been rebuked by Macross Ace itself, which put it in Romaji as Macross Seventh Code.
Wow.
Yeah, I was wrong.
Well, maybe they were wrong too.
They could be wrong.
What's this silent H of which you speak?
It's not chored. I don't think it's chored.
But I'm kind of wondering with that, because that just got ended abruptly when Macross Ace ended. So I'm kind of wondering if they're going to put like an actual ending on it,
right?
Or what? It's
because Macross Plus is continuing in New Type Ace, isn't it?
Yeah, Macross Plus Tack Name is continuing. It's almost finished.
Jesus Christ.
yes.
So when are those due out?
Those are due out on the 10th
of
February.
Well, before this goes up. okay. In other news, then, we had the Ichiban Kuji campaign for the new Macross Frontier figures. Now, Adrian, for those at home who haven't gone through the utter financial butt rape that is Ichiban Kuji, can you explain how it works?
Okay.
Or what it is?
Well, they're released by a subsidiary of Bandai called Banpresto, which is basically Bandai. And they do these over-the-counter, kind of, you buy an 800 yen blind, kind of like the blind box figure thing, but it's a card. Then you pull
this is
it.
At Family Mart, right?
Yeah, well, any place can get them.
Yeah, okay. There are a few venues in Akihabara which were.
It's actually more of an incentive for shops outside of the big cities to buy these boxes, and so that the local kids can go and try to win these, you know, high grade figures. Well, they're middle grade, but they kind of sell them as high grade. And it's 800 yen, and it's a blind pick, and whichever one you pull out, you open it, and it'll be like A prize, B prize.
Yeah.
A prize is always the...
I got the G prize at the Family Mart near my place.
Is that the figure?
No, it was a Cheryl Pan.
So, it's basically a big box. The store will buy this huge box, and it'll have maybe three of the Cheryl figures, three of the Ronka figures, two of the other figure, if there's a third figure, and then these other smaller prizes. But there'll be hundreds of the other smaller prizes.
But the thing, yeah, and that's the thing that sucks about it, is that the smaller figures are totally not worth 800 yen. Yeah.
And within 24 hours, they'll be selling for 300-400 yen all around Akiba, because everyone gets rid of them.
Right.
Because they don't want them.
So but the A prizes are totally worth more than 800
yen. Oh, yeah.
On average, once, on the first day of sale, people will buy it. They win the A prize, the B prize, or the C prize. Half of those people will go and sell them to like a Mandarake or a Liberty.
Right.
And Mandarake will buy them off them probably for about 3,000 yen, even though they paid 800 yen.
Huh.
Mandarake will throw up the Cheryl A prize at start, at least Ichimayan.
Right.
So 10,000.
Yeah. And then the demand will decide the price as the week goes. Cause,
One of my housemates works at Family Mart, and they did a One Piece promotion.
Yeah,
that was very similar recently. And he said there was one guy who came in and spent probably 20,000 yen, this is more than $200 American, trying to get all of the prizes.
Which is ridiculous, because as long as you get the A and B, maybe the C, the rest are available really, really cheap afterwards. But the A one in this case was this great Cheryl figure, which I'd previously seen at an event, which I'll talk about shortly. And it's her in the white uniform, her white uniform from the end of The Wings of Farewell.
Orleans version.
Yeah,
with the big blue flag. And it's just great, great. The minute I saw the prototype for it, I knew I wanted it. And then there's an open ranker for the Nijiro Kumoku.
Well, what I was trying to get was they had glasses, like kind of tumblers, and they had the
I got three of the four. That's the best one.
They had the lovely bomber one. Oh, this is the one I wanted. Yeah,
there you go.
Wow.
I'm only going to charge you 2,000 yen for that.
I am a happy boy. Thank you.
Yeah, it's cool because, just to explain to people, it's a fake piece of merchandise from the Alcatraz concert.
Yes.
It's a
Ronka Lee and Lovely Bomber live in Alcatraz 2059.
You showed me that the other day, but I didn't read it.
They're when your moods.
Yeah, they also released like a towel.
Yeah, he already drank out of it.
Which was
I did not.
It was like they released a concert towel, like they sell at concerts for it as well.
Right.
Which is kind of cool. But yeah, so they had glasses, they had pens, keychains, small kind of super deformed figures. But the big one was, the Cheryl, the Nijiiro Kumakuma Ranka, and a black costume version of that Ranka.
Which is going higher
than anything else. Yeah.
Because there's probably less of those in the box.
Right.
There's probably only two of those in each box, where they probably got at least three of the Cheryls. Three of the regular Ranka.
But the first couple of days this happened, that first weekend in Akihabara, we dropped by and there were places outside of stores. People lined up to pay 800 yen and not know what they were going to get. It was kind of interesting. I tried a couple of times and lost, so ended up going to a shop and just buying the damn figure before it got any more expensive.
No, I took you to a shop.
And you found it, but I ended up buying it regardless.
Otherwise, you would have went and paid a mon for it somewhere else.
Oh, a whole 1,600 yen cheaper.
And then justified it by saying, well, somehow my Sakamoto had something to do with this figure, so it's okay that I bought it.
Right. Right. So, yeah, moving on.
Actually, I just came from Akihabara. I saw that it's not rare by any means, but it is expensive.
It's all over the place at the moment because it's just happened recently, but I've seen it as low as about 9,600 today when I was looking around.
Trust me, that Cheryl's going to be hotter outside of Japan than it is in Japan.
Right.
Yeah. It's a great figure, though. I'm really happy with it. Yeah, I wouldn't mind the regular color Ranker eventually, but
Well, then they have the kind of second chance, because with that ticket,
which I need to do
you
that,
get a code and you go online, you register and you enter that code and you could possibly like win I think it's
Ultimate
they
color.
Make 200 or 250 of this alternate color set of Ronka and Cheryl. But
why
they're
do
usually
they do
god
this?
Ugly colored.
Right, like
variants.
Silver or some.
Well, the Cheryl, she's in bright red.
Okay.
So there you go right there. But those, whoever gets those usually sell for at least Jumayan start.
$1,000?
Yeah, because they're so limited.
Damn. All right. Well, I did mention I'd seen the prototype this at I've seen it at two events actually. It was on at the Macross exhibition at Maru One. They had the non-painted sculpt for it, but then they had it again at the Happy Nyan Year Festival down in Yokohama, which you and I went to.
Happy Nyan Year.
Yeah, it was a cold day in hell that day.
It was one heck of a... Oh, it was crowded.
What day was this?
It was 2 days after I got back from the States.
It was so it was like early...
The 7th?
Or... 8th, I think, of Jan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And basically, there was a Yokohama Macross Frontier Festival... You know, a year or so ago, which I know, you know, we both went to, and the idea of that was to get people pumped for the second movie.
Yeah.
And they replayed bits from the first movie, and they had the staff on stage, that kind of thing. Now, this time around, it was weird because I was wondering why they were holding this event, because there's no new animation coming out, no major new merchandise to speak of.
It's
just
DVD release, yeah, it's no just, CDs. I mean... Both Main and Megumi have content coming out, but it's not Macross related.
Right. So we went, and there was a lot of, you know, merchandise that you can only get at these concerts. And I've got to mention, they had the Ranker teddy bears from the concert scene. They had small ones and large ones, and they were limited to, I think, 200 or 250 each. And because of this, by 5:30 a.m., there were over 250 people lined up to buy these damn teddy bears. And they didn't go on sale till 10 a.m., I 10 think. Something like that.
I like those teddy bears.
I was just unbelievably ridiculous.
Yeah. It's reselling right now, and there's one I see in Ikebukuro.
Right.
Yomaya.
What?
Yomaya. And that's not the signed
bucks,
one either.
Man. Damn.
40,000 yen.
So we go in line, but I end up giving up and just coming back later. Which is a smart thing to do. Although nearly everything was selling out. It was crazy. They have people going up and down the line with microphones. And as items sell out, they announce it. And everyone on the line's like, oh, I've been waiting 3 hours. And and the t-shirts have sold out. Yeah.
Was it? The bears were sold out in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, because yeah, that many people were queued up. So I was just amazed. The amount of people that turned up really showed that Frontier has legs. It's still going strong, even though there's no new content coming up. But so we went in. Once we get in, similar to the first time they did this sort of event, there was a lobby. And in the lobby, you have like a karaoke area. You have lots of fans wandering about in cosplay. You have, you know, the newest Valks or plastic models on display in cases. The newest figures. And they had a bunch of figures there as well.
Yeah, Bandai has a display. Tamashii has a display. Well, it's all Bandai anyway. Damn, monopolize everything. Frontier. yeah, Joy Sound. They have the karaoke.
Yeah, they had a this time they had a cosplayer photo booth set up where the cosplayers were getting front and they digitized the background in.
Yeah,
you know, yeah, lots of bits and pieces of merch. There's a fan club table. We ran into a couple of people we know there, yeah, like just from the Japan fan club. And overall, I mean, I think last year's one was better. There was more to do and see, but still, it was absolutely packed.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, well, it was sold out. And right, then it's not just one show, it's two shows back to back, but you have to have a ticket to get in each show.
Right, and ostensibly it's the same basic content for each show. Like, and we didn't know what it was going to be going in, that was also...
Yeah, it wasn't as good as the last one, because this one was more or less the Macross Radio show done live.
Right, so we get in there, and who did we have turn up guest-wise? So we had Megumi... We had Main, and Main didn't turn up at the last one.
Main wasn't announced for this one, was she?
Yeah.
She was. Okay.
Megumi, we had Main, we had Aya Endo.
Aya Endo.
Is Main's hair still short?
Who cares? Aya Endo.
It's...
I could see Main smile from a million miles away, and that is not a good thing.
There's another box question. Any animation she's in, you just put, who cares? Aya Endo.
Aya Endo. That's exactly
what Who else was there? We had, yeah, Nakamura was there. The guy who did Michelle, Kamiya,
yeah,
was there. Which meant the Nakamura. Girls... Nakamura's...
Oh, the guy, Alto.
Alto, yeah. And because Kamiya's there, the girls, well, swooning as they do.
Man, that guy's got some bad acne.
Yeah. who else did we have? We didn't have Clan this time. Oh, well, Kawamori was there.
He was, How can you forget Carl?
But this
time he didn't put the beard on, so it wasn't
he didn't put
far.
The fake beard on, though. Yeah. And yeah, it was basically more of a talk show. They did like a new episode of their radio drama. They had things where they'd get questions ostensibly from fans, obviously filtered, like asking them to say a line in such and such a scenario in character, like how you'd say it, you know, which was kind of fun, you know. And they even got Maine to do that, who, you know, isn't a voice actor, so that was kind of fun. And the big thing for me was that we got to hear a couple of songs live, which had never been done before. So we got The Wings of Farewell, because Maine was there this time. So we got Megumi and Maine do that, which was really, really good. What was the other song we got?
Oh, you got Open Ranker.
Yeah, we got Open Ranker by Megumi.
And
there was one other song, wasn't it?
The first song from the opening song in the Frontier.
Kinda no Elixir. Right? Yeah. From the church scene.
Because we didn't know there was going to be a live performance, because the last time they didn't have...
They didn't have any scene. Megumi did the end. She had sang
the ending for the first movie, because they play out the last half of the movie on the big screen, and then they have like some kind of pyrotechnics again.
Yeah, the great thing this time was they played the church scene from the beginning of the movie, but then they projected an image of the church all around the walls of the hall.
Wow.
And then at the front, you have a screen where they were playing the actual movie.
Okay.
And then they played the entire, that part of the concert scene with all the lights going off and smoke and stuff. This time at the end, though, they did replay pretty much the entire last 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
With, you know, some extra lights and stuff, which is kind of like, really? I'm paying to be here. But we had better seats this time. You know, we could sit a lot better. But for me, the big thing was getting to see The Wings of Farewell done live, because there are no more, as of this recording, Macross Frontier concerts. They've never done one with Megumi.
Well, they didn't do a live Maine after together.
No, after the movie,
movie,
right?
So.
But then at the end of it, you had one of the greatest fake-outs in Macross history.
Bollocks! I call bollocks on that.
So they start off, so the hall goes completely dark. Everyone's thinking there's going to be some kind of announcement. And, you know, they start playing footage from the original Macross. First, we had the original Macross.
They show the original. It says 1982. And it's just like, black screen, 1982.
Boom.
Then they show it's music. I think it's like My Boyfriend Was a Pilot or something.
Yeah.
It's a pilot. It's clips from Macross, the original series. And it says 84. It's Do You Remember Love? And it's 1992, Macross 2.
It was included.
And I'm the only one cheering. And then it. Then it goes on to Macross 7, Macross 7 Dynamite, Macross 0.
Yep.
And then it goes Frontier. 2007, Frontier, 2012.
No, they did the movies as well.
The movies. And then,
they're like, 2012, And then by this point, like, the tension's raising in the hall, because there's like, you know, several thousand fans in here.
Well, yeah.
And everyone stood up by the time we got to Plus. Everyone's on their feet going, yes, yes! And it's like, 2012,
Macross 7 Core.
No. Watch the website for details. And everyone, anime thing where people fall on their face and their legs go up in the air.
Right,
everyone in the hall.
I had that big sweat.
Except for Macross CN. He was like, oh, I'm on that shit, man.
Well, it's shown all those stupid characters from the site.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be the.
They're supposed to be the production stuff, right?
Like, well, not production. It's supposed to be. Well, it said 2012.
It's the committee.
Well, it said 2012. And then didn't it say, like, people's name, like Kyle Moore's name, blah 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 blah. It said the name,
yeah,
but it was just black screen with white text. And then you're thinking the next thing you're gonna see is rough animation, character design, something, and it's some fucked up looking plushie and this,
with a cap on,
and this Barbie doll looking thing with the Cheryl outfit, and then just a pencil drawing, a stick figure.
And it's like, check the website for details, and of course. The minute you exit the hall, everyone tried to access the website and no one could get onto it because everyone's trying to access it. But, and of course, it was nothing new. I mean, there's this constant gag going like, okay, let's envision a new version of, you know, Miss Macross competition, but with this, you know, and it's like,
well, yeah,
there's a story
to it. Because
Macross 29, you explain.
Yeah,
okay,
but,
so the website, it's like, it's an in-universe thing where the Macross 29 fleet is celebrating their 30th anniversary since leaving Earth.
Right.
But they have some kind of accident. They don't have a whole lot of power. So they need to do something relatively cheap.
And well, this isn't reflective of the situation satellites at the
moment.
So.
At
all.
I think so, yes. Right. Well, they show the Big West building in the on the website.
Yeah. Yes. Probably charge the royalties for that.
And so every week they've got one of the four characters, I think.
Yeah, and I think that each of them is representative of a Big West
committee member.
Right.
Member. Not committee member, the actual company.
Okay.
And employee. So every week one of them will propose an idea for what to do for the 30th anniversary.
Right.
And each one gets rejected.
And they're all kind of ludicrous.
That'd be awesome.
So the first one was the holographic idol fashion show.
Right.
The second one was the Valkyrie aerobatics show. The third one was the Miss Macross 2062.
Yeah, that's the one I was reading. Yeah.
Right. And so next week, presumably, we'll get another one.
Yeah, and certain people throw these up untranslated on the boards and like, wow, news. Like, no, it's kind of all part of this ongoing gag.
It's
there's nothing to
universe
announce.
Thing, yes.
But we're not allowed to say anything because we can't discuss on that board.
Right.
But... But anyway, politics. So that was how the thing ended, which is a bit of a shame. But so we came out, hit the merch stands again, got some merch, and that was it. But look, I just think the whole thing was indicative of how Satellite's almost been caught off guard with how much popularity Frontier has and continues to have.
Right.
They've got this huge fan base, and there's nothing currently, you know, what do we do?
I mean, Satellite would probably love to run with it, but it's not Satellite.
Oh, this is a good
property.
Call. This is a good right. call. No, you make a good distinction there. But look, the one other event that was held recently, last week, in fact, which Renato, you came along to as well.
Which was, I missed, alas.
And that was Milane Nights 02. And this is what's supposed to be an annual concert that Chie Kajiura does for Milane's birthday on the 2nd of February. Every year.
2031.
Can I just say that how weird it is that Chie Kajiura, of all people, has kind of picked up the torch to do these regular Macross-themed, push-it-for-the-Macross fans kind of little mini concerts. It's really... Where did this come from? It's like...
Yeah, because she's not like an anime person at all.
No, right. No, not at all. You know, she's not really active in the industry or...
Yeah.
And, you know, they have...
And
they
she
made,
idolizes Kate Bush.
She does. Mm-hmm. I mean, they made Goobaba stickers, which they'd gotten the permission from Big West to do, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
They made Milane Knight iPhone cases. They made, you know, they had T-shirts. And they had a
I
would
have gotten anything of that if it wasn't, like... Just extortion.
It all went back on sale today on her website if you want any of the leftovers.
Oh, yeah.
They have,
I'm so getting one of those Goobaba stickers.
They had a full cocktail menu of...
I asked Gwyn. Oh. I asked Gwyn, and he said, yeah, there really wasn't anything there. But you missed a really great show.
Well, that's because he couldn't. He didn't put two together. They were selling Goobaba stickers.
Yeah,
that's
oh!
Goobaba.
That's a good point. But no, they weren't sold today on her website.
Oh, okay.
So, for the third time, they had a cocktail menu, which is all themed on like Macross 7 songs.
Yeah, they had
which is kind
the
of
Magic
cool.
Rhapsody. They
the
had
Pillow
the,
Dream.
The Pillow Dream. You know, and
yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But
I was in a love hotel.
All right. On that note, no. but
I was watching Macross 7 episode yesterday.
Oh, and Bobby's trying to take her to the love hotel.
No. It was another one, but it made me think. What was it? Right, it's the one where terrorists take over the main headquarters of
right,
you know,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Milia's held hostage,
right,
and Gamlin comes in from like the first floor.
Is
and
he wearing his orange shirt?
He's wearing his orange shirt. He's yes. got this, yeah. He's sporting the orange shirt and like tranquilizer shotgun.
Yes,
excellent combination. Just but he goes into the building and you expect. You know, having been to many of these kind of buildings in Osaka and Tokyo, you expect a kind of governmental building to be a little more, you know, gray, maybe brownish tint to it, maybe a bit more classical
falling
architecture.
Apart.
It's bright pink. It's like Milia's headquarters is this huge... What's that?
It's the menu.
Yeah, it's just this huge love hotel-looking kind of interior. She must be into that.
Okay.
Carry on.
I've got to say, I'm looking at the menu right now. Malay Night, Special Cocktail, Pillow Dream, Magic Rhapsody, and Tenchi no Egoku no Uta. And which one is no alcohol? Okay, so the Tenchi no Egoku is no alcohol.
Tenchi no Enobu.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
I'm trying to read the kanji here. Yeah, it's just orange juice and
angel pains, right?
So the concert itself, I've got to say, was probably one of the best smaller Macross concerts I've ever been to. It was
amazing. Excellent, yeah.
Now, just for some background, you know, the last year, mm-hmm. year's one was her and Tomo Sakurai, and it had a more poppy feel because Tomo Sakurai was covering the Minmay covers and Chia was doing Milane songs, but mm-hmm. this time it had a more rock vibe. So she had a live band. They went for some serious rearranging of stuff mm-hmm. To make it rockier.
They based it on the arrangements for obviously her albums, she did some original Minmay songs as well. And right, they based the arrangements of that from the Tomo Sakurai album that she right. Milene sings Minmay.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the thing. First of all, she had Fukuyama come on as a special guest. And on top of that, she covered some non-Macross 7 songs.
Yes.
Which just was amazing.
Yeah. Do you remember Love?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which was...
With an excellent ending.
It was probably one of the best... The best cover I've ever heard.
It was the best cover I've ever heard.
Do you remember, Love? I was listening to this saying, they need to put out a DVD of this.
Yeah, or an album.
Or an album, yeah. So she had that.
I want to listen to that again.
She did, was it My...
My Beautiful Place.
Beautiful Place, that's the one, yeah.
Yeah.
Which was okay. Didn't mind it.
No, it was good.
It was good, yeah.
And then
again,
she did,
based on the on the CD that Tomo Sakurai
right.
brought out. It was actually the first Macross CD that I'd ever bought.
Really?
Yes, back in
96
or 97. No.
Was it a full CD?
It was a full album. It was just Minmay songs sung by Tomo Sakurai.
Oh, okay.
And then you had what kind of blew a lot of people away, which was her singing Diamond Crevasse.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Well, by the time she started singing the Minmay songs, I kind of figured a song was going to pop up.
Well, I'd hoped, but it's just like... I don't know,
It was funny because we were talking to Macross fans before it started.
Yes,
because,
we were, yeah.
Because doors opened like an hour and a half before the show began.
Yep.
So we had plenty of time to just chill and relax with our drinks. And there were a couple of Macross fans that you guys know more, you know, better than I.
Yeah, local fans, yeah.
Okay. And one of them was saying, well, I really want her to do some other stuff, like, you know, Diamond Crevasse. And I jokingly say, well, if she's going to do that, why don't she do, like, Milia's Lullaby? She started laughing in my face. Oh, that's for maniacs, man. That's for otaku.
And then I
said, well, everyone here is an otaku. Yeah. And then she did it. It was amazing.
And it was a great... I mean, I was wondering how she'd hit those peaks. And it was yeah. very fast.
Yeah.
It's a much faster song than Chia normally does. And she pulled it off great, you know.
Well, she didn't just mimic...
No.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It wasn't the kind of arranged.
It was her version.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, it wasn't as good as the Do You Remember Love one, but it was pretty good and deserves to be on a CD.
I mean,
or legal download contemptible.
Right. No.
Kind of
definitely.
Bullshit. Whatever.
Right, and of course, you know, Do You Remember Love was great. It was just really nice.
Because the only way you can hear Do You Remember Love and it. Not be a cover is go to a Mari Jima concert.
Yeah, well,
which
yeah,
you didn't I recently.
Did, I, oh, geez, I haven't talked about that.
Yeah.
She's gonna be happy. For me.
Put that in the line. Well, there's not much to talk there, so I can talk about it really briefly in a sec.
Oh my god!
But
I can hear her scream.
But no, and then Fukuyama came on. Now Fukuyama did a lot of background guitar work for Cheers, as she sang.
yeah, but then Chia went off stage and he did some songs on his own.
He did, but she did. She did do a cover, right? She did a Buzzsaw song, right? She, what was it she sang? Damn it, I had the track list, so I don't have it on me.
Well, you got what you wanted in the end.
Yeah, I mean, well, she did a couple of songs with Fukuyama doing backing guitar. Then she took a break. He came on and did a couple of songs. And what did
she
he
did
do?
I think she did Pillow Dream acoustic.
Acoustic,
with him.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just him on guitar and she was singing.
She did Remember 16.
Yeah, yeah, as well. Yeah, that was the second one.
Right.
First one was Pillow Dream.
Okay,
then
yeah.
Remember 16.
That's what, once it cover, that's what I was thinking of. She did Remember 16.
Yeah.
It's not the first time she did it. She did that at the Yoko Kano fan club mm-hmm. event too.
Yeah.
And then she went off stage, and Fukuyama did a couple of songs, namely
Seventh Moon.
Before that, he did Waiting for You,
yeah,
which is on the.
And he did mention it, so he only had like three songs, right? And he said that Chie picked the songs; they were under her orders. He wasn't allowed to touch the set list at all. So she picked Waiting for You. She picked Seventh Moon.
That sounds like something
actually,
she'd do.
Well, you know what? Fukuyama is really hilarious, especially that night. Because
when
he came out, Chie introduced him. Obviously, she was already on stage, and she said, "We have a special guest today." And of course, everyone knew he was coming. It was on the ticket. But he came out, and you know, he loves to joke with the audience. So he's like, "Hey!" He's waving to everyone, and Chie is next to him, like stretching out her hand.
Okay.
To have it shaken, but he ignored it. He's like going, "Yeah, I'm back, man." And so Chie got really pissed off and punched him on the shoulder. Yeah, and then Fukuyama's face after being punched in the shoulder was just hilarious.
Yeah, like,
what was that for? Kind of face.
Yeah, no, and as always, he forgets stuff. And like, he made some comment like, "Wow, you guys are doing like Milane birthday concerts. Does Buzzsaw have a birthday? I suppose he must, right?" When's Buzzsaw's birthday? People from the audience were calling it out.
Yeah, people said it was 15th of August.
August, yeah.
And then Fukuyama said, "What, you mean the day the war ended?"
Yeah.
Sugeyatsuna!
But, yeah, he was in good form. And the third song was when Chie came back out, right? That was when he did Burning Fire.
Yep.
And right.
Once again, it's...
But before that was Seventh Moon.
Yeah.
And the introduction was just perfect. It was like, "Hey, it's Sunday. It's 10 a.m. You know what that means."
Yeah, no, it was good. He was definitely playing to the nostalgia factor. But yeah, and Burning Fire with Chie, they're doing that backing chorus, which
not
normally
that you can hear.
Exactly. Normally the fans all shout it. The problem is this time the fans still all shouted it and kind of drowned Chie out just a little bit. But hearing them do it together was really, really cool.
Well, I have to say... Sorry.
What was the joke you had about Burning Fire a couple years ago? Like, what was it? Wedding Water?
Oh, yeah. That Burning Fire is kind of like a redundant. Cause...
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, the guy who came up with the name is also the guy who named Dynamite Fire and Dungansoul.
Oh, okay.
And Fukuyama talked about him at the concert once. He's like, kind of guy comes up with a name like Dynamite Explosion and follows it up with Burning Fire. Like, What the hell? Yeah. Who comes up with this?
Well, he named his song Like a Fire, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes more sense, ostensibly,
than
Burning Fire. But, yeah, hearing them do it together was great.
Yeah.
And Chie did pretty much most of the Mac 7 staples when it comes to her concerts. Yeah.
Did she do Magic of Love?
No.
Okay.
But
Renato's glaring at me now.
because that other concert that we went
the,
to.
The first concert when Chie Kajiura came back after like 15 years.
Like a really long hiatus, yeah.
But, and she only came back to serenade those in line to buy goods, which the real fans had already bought two concerts ago, I'll have you know.
No. This was the one before that.
This is the one I didn't go to.
Yeah, this was the one that Adrian was.
There was water leaking from, like, the lighting.
Yeah, there was the fire. It was the one in Omoto Sando.
Yeah. We went up and there were fire engines everywhere.
Okay, yeah.
And, and Renato, like, it was your friend. It was Gwyn's friend, right?
Oh, okay, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And Renato was like, "Well, it's not like she's going to sing Koi no Maho or anything like that." And then she sang it.
Right. Because I still had this image of her as not being a very anime-like person, right?
Yeah.
Turns out she is.
Well, she really seems to be embracing it as of late. Which is good, and the fact that Fukuyama turned up... Oh, and we forgot to mention, there were an opening movie, kind of documentary style in a way.
Well, we forgot to mention it because...
There wasn't much that happened, but basically you had Sakurai Tomo, Aya Endo... Aya Endo, man.
Yeah.
Aya Endo. And she herself...
Yeah, I mean, Adrian forgot about the concert because... Aya Endo.
Yeah,
They were just sitting in a room, basically a table, just talking about stuff. And there was some, like, you know, experiences from Macross 7. And it was revealed that Aya Endo actually watched Macross 7 on TV as a kid.
Yeah.
She talked about that.
Oh, that makes me feel old.
Which is kind of interesting.
Well, she's like 20.
And you know... She,
I thought she was like 30.
She's not 30.
No.
Late 20s, I thought.
Early 30s. Wait, look around there,
say really.
Either way.
Yeah, they don't.
But, you know, and Aya talked about how, like, you know, she was really interested in how the singing voice for Cheryl would be done. And she didn't really know until they first brought in Maine. And she was like, wow, she's only like 17, 18. This kid's got to have talent, you know. And then she went down to a recording session to see her sing so she could better, you know, work her voice. And then Maine came and saw her do a recording session. And Sakurai and Chia were like, well, we never got to do stuff like that. I mean, in fact, we hardly ever met during the production at
all. They didn't meet at all.
They didn't really know. Right. And the first time Sakurai saw Chia, she had no idea who she was. She had imagined her as someone completely different, probably much sweeter looking. Mm. Not like Sadako from The Ring. Because she said she saw her from behind, so it would have been just the hair.
Yes.
Was she expecting a pink one-piece suit?
Something like that.
Well, again, this is another thing that I took away from that little video viewing.
Okay.
That they were talking about the outfits that some of the characters wear. You know, that Milan's was really revealing.
Right.
Right, because it had the whole V crotch thing. And what is it? I think some fans, as a present, gave some cosplay costumes to Aya Endo. And she was like, but I've never worn them. I mean, I keep them there in the closet.
And Sakurai's like, didn't you even wear them around the house?
Like, yeah, Sakurai's like... and then they kind of use that as a counterpoint to ask Sakurai, well, what about you? I mean, didn't you... Do you think that you would ever wear whatever Milan wore? And she was like, no, I was never... I mean, I've worn revealing things in the past, but never that bad. And I'm thinking, bollocks to that.
Yes, those, we some all of those remember Lemon Angel...
She was a porno seiyuu, for God's sake.
Well,
the one where
selective
all...
memory that comes with age.
Exactly.
Yeah, the one where,
so
like,
I'm looking at this 40-year-old woman going, I would never. And I'm like, I know what you did when you were younger.
Yeah,
when we
those,
were all much younger.
Lemon Angel videos where they're like in the kiddie pool.
Yeah,
and
she's
wearing like the red and white striped...
Hey, I have a Lemon Angel book.
Suit.
You want to borrow it?
Maybe.
And these guys bizarre. Talk down about the present otaku situation.
Yeah.
I've got a Lemon Angel book. You want to borrow it?
It's racy.
Oh, God.
I'll swap you. I'll lend you a Strike Witches book. How's that?
What's Strike Witches?
Oh, come on.
Seriously, I don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
It's probably
the same as Milan, except for they've got, like, airplane parts for legs.
Oh, I know that. Yeah, I've seen that.
And, yeah. But, and so they had the beginning section of that video, and then in the middle they kind of took a break and had a second part of it. And it was all just filmed in this one room, wasn't it? You know, just the singing around the table.
Yeah,
it was
just some static.
Just shooting the shit, basically.
Thing,
yeah.
Oh, they changed angles a few times. They had a cameraman, obviously. But yeah, you know, they're just talking about past experiences making a series. I mean, I thought it was fun. It was pretty lightweight, but you know,
it was
fun
okay.
Enough.
I mean, it's nothing that they couldn't have just put online.
And it's a shame that, you know, not that she'd be able to sing anyway, but that Aya didn't turn up at the gig, or that
she has sung though.
Has she?
Yeah. Well, she did the on one of the Macross Frontier drama albums. She did Little Girl Cheryl singing Totsugeki Love Heart.
Okay. Fair enough. Huh. Well, then...
Nobody listens to those CDs.
I haven't listened to them yet.
I've been meaning to.
I've been meaning to.
No.
These guys.
No, I mean, I'm surprised Adrian hasn't, because, I mean, who cares? I end up.
Iando's on almost every track.
Adrian just wants to see her, not hear.
Yeah.
Well,
has nothing to do with Cheryl. It's just seeing Iando.
Okay.
Okay.
So if you had in front of you Megumi in that denim shorts and t-shirt outfit she wore backstage and Iando, which
Adrian is looking like you he's concentrating right. very hard.
It's
right
like
now.
Lone Wolf and Cub. You have a sword or a bright ball. Which do you go for? One will get you death.
We'll he's be back. Concentrating.
We'll be
yes.
back after these messages.
I'm going to answer.
You're going to do a Kalamori answer.
I'll do a Kalamori answer.
Okay.
I would just put the two together.
Yeah, that's right. I'd take the best parts of each.
I would put Megumi's legs, Aya's eyes.
I stopped listening when you said legs. Anyway, one interesting thing I took away from the concert, though, Renata, was that Chia mentioned she is actually trying to theme these. Like, the first one last year was a more pop theme. This one was a more rock theme. And she's like, you know, if she does one next year, which she intends to, because for the first time, the 2nd of February will fall on a weekend next year.
Yes,
the last two times
it's
been during the week.
So it's going to be a Sharon Apple techno party.
Well, I'm just wondering how she's going
to
do
with it. You know how to get internal light in the darkness of our
I just want to know what she's going to theme it as. But,
whatever.
But it could be interesting. On a final note from me, yeah, back around Christmas time, there was Mari Ijima, you know, Minmay, flew back into Tokyo to do a little gig down in Yokosuka. Of all places. And it was this little club, like, it was a little live house where, you know, you buy coffee, everyone's got their seats. I had this great view. I was maybe 2-3 tables back, but I was elevated, so I had a straight view to the stage. And, you know, she did the gig, and she did not do a single Macross song. No single one.
Oh, really?
And the funny thing is, she finished, and she was like, she came back for an encore, did, like, one song, I think, and then she's like, okay, guys, that's the end of the concert. Did you want me to do another song? I really haven't prepared another song. Should I do a Macross song? And everyone's completely silent because if you say yes, she won't do it.
Yeah. You know? Or you get banned.
And then she's like, well, okay, maybe I'll do Do You Remember Love? She's like, but you know, when I put this set list up on Facebook, you know, unlike normally, suddenly I'll get 200 messages, "We love Minmay," from all my fans, and then I'll delete the post. But I'll do it. And I'm like, okay, so you're dissing your fans or whatever. But
and
then
all
she...
the Japanese fans said, "What's Facebook?"
Yeah, exactly. but in the end, she did be warming up to get the piano in key. But she did do "Do You Remember Love?" And it was a really nice, you know, rendition.
Well, the first time I ever saw her, which was like 2004, in Los Angeles, like she didn't really do any Macross songs, and at the end she was like, "Well, do you guys have any requests?" And and so I shouted out for Tenshi no
Enoku.
and she started it, and then she did a little bit of it, and she sang it for about a minute, and then she stopped, and she was like, "Okay, that was the short version." And that
oh
was
wow,
it.
Okay,
right.
Well, there was just that. Because every summer she does her, you know, one day in Tokyo morning and afternoon session. And there was just that one time the year before last where she ended up dedicating her entire morning session to just like 90% Macross songs. It blew everyone away. She's never really... did more Macross songs and better Macross songs than she did at the crossover live. For crying out loud.
That might have been because what's his name?
Past one? Right. Possibly, right. Yeah. But,
what's his name?
The guy who wrote Do You Remember?
Right,
Love?
Yeah, because he killed himself on the night of
on the night of the first
crossover night.
Right. Night and
I can't remember.
Bye.
But anyways, look, enough about music, gentlemen. I believe you have some...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe you have some figure news, right? Or some toy news, I should say.
Yeah. But it's just me talking by myself, right?
No, we'll join in.
Go for it.
Richard, you're like...
I go for the Hasegawas.
Richard does not own a Yamato Valk.
I do not own a Yamato Valk, but I own pretty much all of the Hasegawas.
Well, I'll admit, I don't own a single full-price Yamato Valk.
Oh, shit. Anyway.
Just want to rub that
God.
In.
God. Right. Yeah, but the other stuff you spend top dollar on makes well up for it. So.
All right, talk, Renato, quick, before I get incriminated.
Before I get bored. All right, so the VF-17 is out. Yay.
Yay.
Anyone bought it? Anyone you know bought it?
Yes, no. Interestingly enough, a guy from my office who's more of a Gunpra kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking a bit of Macross with him on and off as of late, and he just got real interested in Valkyries, and he came out with us to see Berserk today, and afterwards he's like, I want to buy a Valk. I was like, what do you want? A Yamato Valk? Do you want a plastic model to build? He's like, well, I'm more into plastic model kits, but let's see what's out there. So we went to a few shops where they had, you know, glass displays of Valks, and he went over all of them, and for some reason he got hooked on the 17. He just loved the form factor because it just reminded him of a stealth bomber or something.
Stealth fighter.
Well, a fighter version, but you know, that classical stealth look to it.
Yeah.
And he just got obsessed with it. And we went to all these shops, and the only thing we could really find was with the recently released, you know, Yamato one. So ended up blowing $200 and just buying it. So I don't, like, you know, it's the first day he'd ever thought about buying a Valk. He hasn't actually watched any Macross ever.
Adrian is shaking his head.
You guys in your fucking, oh my god, it's like, you know, two blah blah, it's expensive, and they just break all the time, and fucking, what do you expect?
I didn't say that things break, what are you talking about?
Oh, mister, oh, I'll buy it eventually when it's 50% off.
It's got nothing to do about whether it's broken or not.
I know.
Okay.
Let's just go out and fucking buy the thing. You like it?
You want me to pay rent or not?
Well, that's not my problem. You just gotta pay rent. No, it's just...
So, Renato, you didn't get it?
No.
Are you, like, would you like to get it? Is it, like...
Yeah, I'd get it.
Where is
Again,
it on your...
when it gets cheaper. I just don't have the...
Where is it on your list here? Come on, like priority-wise.
When
like...
Yamato finally needs to close its doors and get rid of everything that's on in the room, he'll go and buy it from...
Dude, I'll line up. Richard, you didn't get it, right?
No.
Adrian, hang on, you didn't get it either.
I'm not a fan of the 17, but
you never bought that Fire Valk either, did you?
I got the sound booster for it.
Was Has it on Graham sale? Bought it yet?
Was it on sale, motherfucker? Was it on sale?
Hey, I've paid my dues. I've bought my Beagle, like in
what?
Ride armor.
What?
I've bought.
That's
I've
not
bought
Macross.
Everything. I've got my.
It's not even Yamato either.
Right? Yeah, that's like some goofy show that I've been watching.
No, it's not by Yamato, but it's by the same guy that does all the Valks. So the guy does the cat.
So no one's bought it, is the long short of it. But
no one's bought it.
I was which it actually Valk, reminds one, me one of a surprise bit of news, which I guess is Macross news, but
okay.
Toynami.
Is that Macross? Oh!
Daisuke.
Daisuke.
Daisuke getting let go.
Yeah.
Daisuke is this guy who goes by the name Made in Japan on the forums.
Okay.
Yeah.
He is a sculptor, I believe.
Yeah.
I never met the guy.
He's really
he's
cool. He's really
quite
cool.
active in the local area, right?
Yeah, well, I've met him when I went to
the
Macross 10.
Mm.
And it was the first time I met him. And
where he had his giant Optimus Prime. Did he bring
I
that?
I don't think he brought it that time. That one,
okay.
That time
I
was
saw
all
that,
Macross
And
thing?
That was amazing.
And we actually... did kind of like an impromptu like panel on toys. Mm-hmm. They basically came up and said, can you do something about toys with Daisuke? And then they had me, him, and Egan Lou talk about toys. Egan didn't say a word. He just kept showing like signature boards.
Egan's like, I've met everyone who's responsible for what you're making. So.
If we mentioned Shoji Kawamori, he would just go, well, Shoji Kawamori signature.
Right. Right.
But that was the first time I met him, and we talked a little bit and stuff, and follow him on Facebook, so every once in a while we'll send comments back to each other about what's going on here or anything. And yeah, there was that post I saw on Robotech X.
Right.
Somebody put a post saying that Daisuke was let go And of course, anything that's going to be on Robotech X can just be somebody shooting their mouth off. So I went on Twitter and he posted it that. And it was really vague. He just said, yeah, I'm no longer at Toynami, blah, 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 blah. So I sent him a message saying, oh, sorry to hear about the news. But his reaction was pretty positive. And he basically said that, you know, he was looking to move on anyway. So I mean, he's probably got stuff, you know, he's going to want to do.
But probably not Macross stuff.
I don't know. I mean, he's got
to be able to do it otherwise.
Yeah. And he's become friends with a lot of the people that work in the toy industry here in Japan are directly related to Macross and Speedo. Okay. So, and you know, they all talk on Twitter back and forth.
Going straight to the source.
I mean,
so yeah.
That's exactly what
meanwhile, the rest of his stuff is on a boat somewhere, I believe.
Yes. No, they arrived.
No,
they arrived.
Oh, did they? Apparently he made some comment about he had made some Destroid sculpts and they're in possession. Toynami has possession of them, but he doesn't know what they're going to do with them.
Yeah.
So I would say with the economy, it has nothing to do with Robotech or anything. It's just they're going to sit on that stuff.
That's also what Kevin would say.
What?
The economy. The economy.
That's
why the Robotech movie isn't being made. That's why we're not doing anything. That's why there's no news.
I just mean in general, as far as Toynami's probably picking and choosing what they produce in this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, if Yamato can't sell Destroids, I don't think that Toynami would be able to.
So.
Okay.
Anyway, included in the VF-17, just going back to that, was a piece of paper. And on that piece of paper, it said, VF-4 coming soon. So...
say it right. VF-4G.
VF-4G Lightning 3.
G, fucking... video game based fighter that transforms into this fucking piece of crap.
Is there
shit.
Really a difference between the VF4 from Flashback and the VF4 from VFX?
Yeah, I didn't the Flashback one does not transform.
We don't know that.
If you don't know it, then it doesn't do it. Okay. I just want a VF4 that just I can sit.
In that case,
on
no
my
character
desk.
Has reproductive organs.
So speaking of,
but I believe that Max and Miri had a son. So,
a daughter.
Oh, shit.
Jesus, you haven't had what one beer, man? Come on, cracking up.
I'm
just
saying
stuff.
That. I mean, the main thing is, I like the fighter mode of the VF4. And they made the stupid game. They made it transform. They had Kawamori figure out a transformation for it.
Okay.
And now they're going to take this sleek fighter, and they're going to turn it into... It's going to basically look like...
What you need to do then is wait for Hasegawa to come out with the VF4. Then you pay William Chang to do, like, one for you. And... send it to you, stunning.
No, thanks. Like I said, if Yamato makes it and they put a $300 price tag on it, I'll buy it. Just have the clout to tell you guys to shut the fuck up. But what they're releasing, when it gets put together, there's so many odd end parts. It just looks like a bunch of bricks tied together with rubber bands. So anyways, that's going to be released. Apparently, it's a web exclusive.
Really?
Really?
Apparently. Well, I mean, it's a smart move.
I'd be interested.
Domestically, in the Japanese market, it's a smart move to do everything domestic, online exclusives, because you get more money for the stuff you produce. It sucks for you guys that don't live here. I know that.
Right.
But
in the past,
they've
had
turned
some
up
kind
in the
of...
showroom. Quite often.
Well, no, but they've also had that exclusive deal with HLJ, which makes them available for the overseas audience.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
So, but
like
the
Angel Birds and all that was supposed to be exclusive. But everyone outside Japan got it.
But they get really, really low numbers. I mean...
But they make low numbers anyway.
Yeah, so... I mean, they may be able to get it. But it's going to be a kit, as far as we know. Full details aren't even out. So they'll probably show at Wonderfest next week. And they'll probably have the full details.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they're working on another Valk at this point.
I'm still not sure whether or not I should go to Wonderfest. Oh, speaking of Wonderfest, Expertin. That guy is on top form. This is this guy that makes garage kits.
Okay.
Of really, really interesting designs. But also he makes Macross kits.
Okay.
And lately he's been on a roll with the VF-11 kits.
Okay.
He's making perfect transformation 1/100 scale kits. And in perfect, as in like the canopy cover and everything, right?
Wow.
He also revealed quite recently a VF-11D, the two-seater variant.
Mm-hmm. Jamming Birds one?
The Jamming Birds one, which not even Yamato has made. And also full armor Thunderbolt.
Wow.
Mm.
Okay. So that's that. 30,000 yen, please. Thank you.
Yeah. At a price point of 30,000 yen and 1/100, was it
1/100 sale.
1/100 scale.
Pretty small.
Which is puny and needs a lot of work.
And you have to put it together. You have to paint it. But oh no, Yamato, you guys just put me over the barrel every time you give me something that's already pre-made and nice packaging and a 160 scale. Yeah.
Well, when you compare it to that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So is that it in regards to 20 years?
There was one more thing. Oh, yeah, VF-25S. Ozma Valkyrie. Renewal version.
Mm.
It came and went. Because yeah. I have not seen one.
They did the renewal of Alto's one recently.
Both.
That's the Chogokin we're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. But that was already a few months ago. So
yeah, because I had the original run of that, and I was really annoyed that they did a renewal version.
No,
you're an idiot for buying the original run anyway.
The original run was sucked. Not that good.
No, I pre-ordered. I didn't look at it and choose it. I was on the Frontier hype train.
Well, that's what Yamato actually did, because when Bandai came out with that, because they were boosting like how they had all the Bandai designers, and it was all Bandai making this fighter for Frontier.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the final product came out, I remember going to the Yamato office, and in their old showroom, whenever they'd have meetings, they would actually show, they would pull out the Alto 25, the Messiah, and they'd pull out their latest 160 and be like, okay, this is what Bandai produces, and this is what we produce. Basically saying, theirs is chunky, ours is slim and nice.
It's like, taste the difference.
Yeah,
well, basically. And Hasegawa just recently came out with the 172nd VF-11.
Mm.
Oh, and the Macross the Ride version as well.
Yeah, they came out with the Macross the Ride. Cool. Right.
Really?
But yeah, it's like really expensive. It's like, I think the normal one is like under 3,000 yen, and the Macross the Ride version is like 4,200.
It's because the Macross the Ride version has resin parts.
Okay.
Instead of but it takes away parts from the original design. It's got, instead of a gun pod, they should have included the gun pod anyway, but I hear that it's on its own sprue, so they just took that runner away and instead put in resin camera parts.
Because
if you look at the
It's
the
Thunder Focus.
Mm.
So
yeah,
it's,
the green
it's
one,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's like, it's filming. It's a filming Valkyrie.
Like, just like you, you know, the S&N Valkyrie.
Oh shit!
God. I just still don't understand why Hasegawa hasn't come out with a Gerwalk.
They don't want to see our side moving.
Hasegawa only focuses on the fighter mode.
No, but they did they did Batroids for VF1 and for VF0.
The smaller scale one.
No, 172nd.
They did
VF0.
Yeah, they did VF0. They have not only the regular version, but they also have the reactive armor version.
That's
right.
Yeah. That's a pretty big one.
Jesus. Yeah.
You don't even see that in stores anymore. That's a hard one to find.
Well, one thing I found interesting is that the renewal version of Alto's 25, like secondhand, it's already over $300 secondhand. But more than that, the Durandal?
No, you're 29? Getting confused. The Durandals.
No, that as well. That one I saw today going close to 400 secondhand. It's unbelievably hard to get. But even on Amazon, the renewal version of Alto's 25 is over 3 months.
I've heard the
reissue. Okay, stop going by Amazon.
No, I only go by Amazon for Alto. But the Durandal I saw in person.
No, Durandal in person, minimum, is like Saman, Sanze, and something.
Yeah.
Start.
Yeah.
I don't know about the Alto. I haven't seen one because since they came out, nowhere.
The 29, I think it's getting reissued.
Yeah. I hope so. I wouldn't mind one. I want an alternate paint color
kit for it.
And the Ozma, I can.
Well, they made a 100.
They made one 100, but I want 172nd.
Yeah. There's like I've only seen Ozma in like two shops, but it doesn't last too long.
You may I grab one of your chew highs after that?
You may, but before you do so, is that all the news we've got? I think that's about it overall, yeah.
I think so, there's probably more, but carry on. Because.
All right, no. So look, I'm going to jump to our guest. So with us today, we've got a very special guest, although not one that's necessarily equated with Macross fandom as such. But all the way from Iskandar today, we have Tim Eldred.
Hello, Internet.
And Tim, you're here in Tokyo. Do you want to fill us in on why you're here?
Yeah, and apologies going in. My voice is a little raw right now because it's kind of cold here. And I've been pounding the pavement for several days as part of the latest of what I call the Yama Tour. It's a sort of series of travelogues that I write for my website, starblazers.com. And I'm a huge space battleship Yamato guy. And for the past several years, there have been lots of Yamato events to travel for. And I just came up with the name Yama Tour to encompass all the wonderful Yamato-related things that are happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And I come here in person when I can, usually for movie premieres. I haven't missed one in 3 years running now. But they seem to happen in the wintertime. And since I'm from Los Angeles, where it's summer right now, I usually come in ill-prepared for the effects of the weather.
All right. But you have made, I mean, what, this is your third one since 2009?
I did two of them in 2009.
Right.
One in 2010, and this is my fourth.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And you always just seem to have this perfect storm that always results in the best possible visit.
Yeah, pretty much. Things just seem to line up. I mean, there's also a lot of careful planning. I have to start working several weeks in advance to line up interviews and explore around and see what's happening that's related to, you know, the latest movie release or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of careful planning that goes into setting up a week of chaos. And somehow magically I end up in the right place at the right time, or I trip over something I wasn't expecting to see, and it enriches the entire experience. And the accidents just make it that much more fun, as we all discovered last year.
We did, with the fake Leiji Matsumoto.
Yeah, if you want to check out that story, go to the website, starblazers.com, and look around for the travelogues, and check out Yama Tour 2010. It was a real adventure.
Now, before we get into things, I've got to ask you a question I asked these two gentlemen earlier on, thanks to the magic of the internet, and that is what you've been watching recently.
The most recent thing that I've got underway is Fist of the North Star 2. And the reason for that is the fourth box set finally came out on DVD in America from, was it Discotech?
Was it Discotech or was it?
Yeah.
No idea?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Discotech.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've been a Fist fan ever since it first started.
I could really edit that statement into a good intro. Anyway.
Yeah, well, if you want to be friendly with me afterward, act accordingly.
So you've been a big fan of...
Yeah, Fist of the North Star is one of my all-time permanent top 10 anime shows. I love it. And to my absolute amazement, somebody finally, after 20-plus years, got the whole damn thing out on DVD. And so I'm enjoying my run through the second series of the show, which is... fills up the fourth box and takes it to the end.
I've got to ask, while it was never released
officially outside of Japan, to my knowledge. Did you watch any of the more recent theatrical?
All of them, yeah. I was actually here. One of my trips brought me here at just the right time to see the last of the three movies. The
Kenshiro Zero.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the weakest, unfortunately.
Yeah. Story-wise, it was the weakest. But, you know, to see him on the big screen and see him finally cut loose, you know, for the big fight at the end was definitely worth it.
And the just the art, that thick brush style on the big screen.
Yeah, and the hyper-detailed line work and the multiple color levels and everything made it a real treat.
I've always kind of been surprised I didn't release that in the US because they released the subsequent OVA about Rao, which was by a completely different artist.
You mean the 13-episode TV series?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that made it, if you look on the back of the box for the English release, it refers to the movies that never got released.
Maybe it was wishful thinking.
Deal fell through, I don't know. Yeah. But okay. So another question I always ask, well, we always ask everyone that comes on the show is, we ask you to start off by explaining your history with Macross or your earliest experiences with Macross.
Okay.
Anything in particular there you'd like to?
Well, it goes back to the beginning of the entire Harmony Gold adventure with the first Macross home videotape that was released on VHS in America. Okay. When it was still called Macross, you know, pre-Robotech.
Ricky Yamada.
Yeah, exactly.
You had that theme song that you love to spontaneously burst out and sing.
Oh, that's
Macross, blah, blah, blah.
I always wanted
just
to hear
just a pile of rust was all they found on that aisle.
It was always a dream of mine to hear Bill Murray sing that. Nick the Lounge Singer just belting it out.
He still might.
Okay, yeah.
So that was the first time I actually got to see it, and that was thanks to a friend of mine who I sort of grew up with back in Michigan named Steve Harrison. He's one of those famous anime fans who was sort of connected to everybody by 6 degrees or less.
I've seen his comments on Colony Drop.
Oh, he's on everything. All the time.
Yeah.
And
all those names that I think... I know this name, but I don't know where from exactly.
Yeah, it's... everywhere. It's amazing how many lives he's touched, even remotely. But I was able to see this thanks to him. He ordered a copy of that first tape, and he'd already collected a handful of Macross episodes. So we were able to sort of get in on the ground floor of it. And then maybe 6 months later, we started to get Robotech from friends in other cities. It didn't play in Michigan for many, many years. But it did play in Chicago, so we had some friends who recorded it for us, and we got copies. And that I still remember the first time through watching Robotech. It was a revelation. Second time through, not so much. The first time through, I think I was getting the magic of the original, because I was that's what I was looking for. The second time through, I started to notice more of the compromises, shall we say, in the translation of the story.
Right.
The music started to bug me more, you know, all the replacement music. And it started to seem more like an American show because it had so many American sensibilities kind of forced into it. And over time, I did manage to see the original from end to end. I have to admit, though, it had been kind of compromised for me because every time I watched that, I was flashback to Robotech and, you know, comparisons were inevitable. And that sort of drew me away from the experience a little bit. However, parallel to that, I was buying model kits left and right.
Okay.
And I lost count of all the Valkyries I built. There were tons of them.
You still have those? Or?
I still have unbuilt Valkyrie kits. In
those
my
the
collection.
Revell kits or the imported?
The imported ones, mostly from Emi and Ari. I like the Emi kits a lot better, just because they had more engineering that kept them in one piece.
And box art that actually was based on the show and not camouflaged Valkyries.
Yeah, exactly.
Fighting in a forest.
Exactly. At the time I built them, I hadn't seen the whole show. I collected maybe a few books on it. So my imagination ran wild as I was building one Valkyrie after another, imagining all the scenarios they might be put through. That's always a dangerous way to approach an anime, because if your imagination is running far ahead of what's actually there, it can skew your expectations quite a bit. So after a few years of that, I did sort of burn out on it. I was already on to many, many other shows by the time most people I knew were catching on. And so there was always a little bit of impatience on my part when somebody would scream and yell about how great Robotech was, and then I'd try to guide them over here. No, wait. Yes, it's great, but look at this thing. And it was always kind of hard to pull them, you know, into the future. And so that contributed to my gradual disillusionment with Macross and Robotech.
I thought you were going to say with anime fandom. I was going to say join the club.
Well, yeah, that kind of goes with the territory. And then a few years later, I came back to it again and found that I liked it more than I thought I would. You know, revisiting it again was a pleasure after I'd put some distance between myself and the original experience. And ultimately what I figured out was that the show was always the same. It was just me and my tastes changing from year to year.
Right.
And, you know, rising and falling and rising and falling, and eventually coming back and rediscovering what was good about it. You know, like going back to an ex-girlfriend and remembering, yeah, we did have some good times. So let's relive a few of those. And then later on came the comic book experience, but I think we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah, no, certainly. All right, so, and apart from the original series, I'm not asking for impressions, but roughly, I mean, have you kept up with the subsequent shows at all? Or?
Most of them, yeah. I haven't seen Seven. I know some things about it because I collected the entire run of Macross Chronicle.
Right.
So I was able to at least see who the characters are. And it's one of those shows that has been sitting in my collection waiting to be watched, along with so many others. So I'll get to it eventually. I do remember seeing Macross 2 in a movie theater in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Adrian, did you go to that?
I went to that in Santa Monica.
I went to one in Sunset.
Sunset?
Yeah.
I think it was Lamley. Theaters?
Yeah, it was a Lamley Art House Theater, and I remember seeing a trailer on it for Hard Boiled. That probably puts it in a time frame for you.
You just have the music from that Hard Boiled trailer as a ringtone.
Yeah, Macross 2 is a lot easier to watch volume one.
Like, as in one episode?
Back to back in a theater?
Yeah.
By the end, you want out.
This is coming from one of the biggest Macross 2 fans I know.
Yeah, in the theater, it's torture.
The only thing I vividly remember from it was the audience was dead quiet through most of it until the girl yelled, "Take me to the moon, Hibiki!" And then we busted out with the one and only laugh of the entire show.
Let's go. Please take me to the moon.
And it was worth waiting for.
Okay.
Well, now you know what clips to put in there.
Come on. It'll be magical.
I told you before, and you don't know shit about culture.
No. And after that, I was lucky enough to catch Macross Plus and all of the Frontier TV series.
Nice. Yeah. Now, you mentioned the Chronicles, and just briefly, I know that one of the things you set up for this current trip to Japan was to talk to the artist of both the Macross Chronicle and the Yamato Fact Files.
Right.
Hidetaka Tenjin. And I was just, you know, wondering just generally what your impressions were or how it went.
Well, it's been a day since you and I talked to him out in Chiba. And I was really impressed by what a thoughtful guy he is. I went in with a long list of questions, hoping to learn some things about the history of box art just as an art form unto itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was glad to find out that I had already kind of keyed in on who the top guys are,
mm-hmm.
because as I mentioned their names, he gave me feedback that indicated, yes, this guy is one of the masters, and mm-hmm. this guy is also one of the masters.
Mm.
It was specifically Komatsubara and Takani
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
Yuji Kaida. Mm-hmm. And those do seem to be the giants. He mentioned one or two others whose names I can't right. recall at the moment.
I know Takani's artwork books go for a fortune even today. Like, they didn't reprint most of them. And
mm-hmm.
whenever I come across one, someone at my office will have one.
Right.
And they're not parting with it no matter how much I beg. And I've yeah. begged. I've begged.
Yeah. He's also, he seems very humble.
Mm-hmm.
He is absolutely a superstar, but every time I tried to convince him of that, he seemed to wave it off.
Well, that's because he still compares himself to Takani.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, he owns Takani originals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he does, actually. Yeah.
You know, he still thinks that as long as he's in the same world as them, he has to have his humble image, you know.
Yeah. And at the very end of it, he asked me a kind of a surprising question, which was, why did you want to meet me?
Right.
Which I thought was obvious
right,
right yeah. from the beginning.
Yeah.
The primary reason was, in addition to his fantastic art, he now holds the title for painting more Yamato mecha than anyone, even during the production years of the series.
Right, because that Yamato magazine was weekly, wasn't it?
It was a weekly. It ran for 80 issues, and he painted the mecha cover art for probably 60 to 65.
Oh, so he didn't do it every week.
They had one of the original artists who worked on the series.
Actually, come, a few.
A few. Okay. Come in, what, approximately every 10 issues, I think.
Every 10 or so.
Every time Tenjin collapsed.
Pretty much. I mean, that was to give him a break because, you know, that's a lot to do.
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's not the only thing he does.
No.
Yeah, he does a lot of stuff at the
time. And it was really interesting hearing his description of what it takes to actually produce that much artwork in that time frame. So it was very educational all around.
Yeah.
Good experience. And we'll be publishing that interview at starblazers.com
mm-hmm.
Probably on April 1st if we can get it all translated in time.
Terrific. All right. Well, we'll be sure to put a link up so we can direct people to that. So
yeah, because this edit probably won't be ready by then.
Well, now I know what I'm cutting out of this part of the podcast.
Nothing like it.
So, I know, Tim, one of the things you're more renowned for, probably among the fan community, is your work in the comic book industry.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, would you describe yourself first and foremost as a comic book artist?
Well, that's how I started out. I eventually had to kind of wean myself off of that because there wasn't much money in it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there was still a lot I wanted to do, it just wasn't going to pay the bills, especially living in Los Angeles. So I took all the skills that I'd gained from that and moved into animation.
Mm-hmm.
So my primary job now is storyboarding for various TV cartoons.
Right. But earlier on in your career, you did do a few anime-related comic books.
Yeah. Most of what I did was anime-related. I was lucky enough to get to do an original series every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, obviously something that's got approval and recognition is going to get
mm-hmm.
a lot more energy behind it from a publisher.
Right. Right. An established IP as such. Right?
Exactly.
Right. All right. Now, so what I wanted to pick your brain a little bit on was the Robotech comics back in the day, because speaking for myself, watching Robotech at about 7:30 in the morning every Saturday, which is when it aired in Sydney, it always said at the end credits, it was like the read the comic books published by, was it Comico?
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, adaption. Comico did not exist in Australia. No one knew where to get the imported comics. It was just redundant. It was like those cards you got in the back of G.I. Joe figures saying you could collect all the points and send them in to some address in the US that wouldn't pay your postage to send your free figures back out to you. So it was almost this other world, and it wasn't until I got older and learned more about fandom back in the 80s and 90s, well, 80s, that I learnt more about the comics because I'd never seen them in Australia. So can you tell me anything about these?
Well, the Kimiko comics were an animal unto themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I never worked on any of those. I was still a rank amateur at that point. Mm-hmm. But I also didn't like them very much. I expected a higher level of quality
mm-hmm.
than they were apparently willing to put together.
Now, when we say quality here, we're talking about just basic art?
Yeah, just the basic rudimentary art of figure drawing
mm-hmm.
and perspective and detail
mm.
and background. It seemed like they had a knack for finding the least experienced artists they could get for a project like this, which I felt deserved better.
Mm-hmm.
And if any of those artists are still around and listening to this, this is not a knock on you in particular, because every artist will go through a long learning curve
mm-hmm.
and every artist will look back at their earlier work, you know, especially if it's 10 or 20 years old, and not like what they see. And I go through the same thing. I look back at the first comics I did and I don't like what I see because all I see are the mistakes. But by the same token, any artist can tell when another artist doesn't have it together yet. If you're an artist, you can always recognize a house with no foundation. And that's what I kept seeing in those Kimiko comics, and it kept bugging me. It's like, you know, this is a huge opportunity.
Mm.
We could get some really dynamic artists who know their stuff to, you know, adapt a little bit into the Japanese mode.
Mm.
But instead, the character drawings seemed very cartoony and very rubbery and not even up to the standard of some of the roughest TV episodes.
Well, from what I understand, and Renato, Adrian, feel free to jump in, because you're probably more knowledgeable on this than I am, but oftentimes the artists were just given a recording of the show. And we're told to do adaptations as quickly as possible to mm-hmm. crank them out while the show is still fresh in the kids' memories, and they go to the newsstand and pick up the comic book.
Well, the first issue was called Macross.
Yeah.
As well, if I remember correctly.
Right.
I remember it was an adaptation of a very early script where even the character names didn't match either the first tape, the Macross tape with the stupid song, or the Robotech names. So I don't remember what the names were exactly,
mm-hmm.
but I know it wasn't... I think it wasn't either Rick Yamada or Rick Hunter.
It was the Robotech names, but the cover was Brandon Macross.
Are you sure it didn't have like a third Rick Hunter alternative name?
No.
Well, we have to...
And it was the only cover that was actually different from the rest of the series.
Right, because from number two, they called it Robotech the Macross Saga.
No, there was actually a design kind of aesthetic to all the rest that went on to all the generations.
Oh, okay.
But this one was just a full cover of the Macross above the city.
Okay.
And I think it was like front page, front and back page cover.
As a little aside, a couple of years back, I used one of the pages from that first issue, scanned, and I took out a lot of the dialogue from the speech bubbles,
mm-hmm.
and I used it as an exam question in a university. Do you know Kyoto Seika University? They have the manga faculty there.
Right.
Takumiya Keiko is the manga...
Who I want to meet someday.
Well, I can introduce you to her. Well, anyway, that will be some other time. It was an English exam.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically, you had these choices of dialogue. And
so, like you're falling from a great height. Do you pick Jerwalk or Fighter Mode or Battleroid?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But anyway, that's it was useful for that.
Okay.
That's what I want to say.
Okay.
Does anybody remember a Robotech comic book that came out from DC before the TV series got rolling?
Robotech Defenders.
I can't remember what it was called specifically.
It had Dugrum and all these other robots.
Yeah, it was just sort of a random cherry pick of the model kits that Revell had had put out under that umbrella title.
It was kind of like the Shogun Warriors thing, where they're all mixed together from different shows,
Okay, just wanted to make sure I wasn't insane.
No, it definitely existed. Robotech Defenders is what it was called. The same logo and everything.
So I remember seeing a picture of the cover of that in an issue of some magazine.
With the Dugrim flying towards you.
Yeah, something like that. I just remember being advertised going, I can't get this damn thing. But that was the case in most anime magazines in the day. Like, you know, they'd review all these great Macross soundtracks and you could never get your hands on one without paying some exorbitant price. But, sorry, Tim, so...
Well, I was knocking on Kimiko.
Right.
I gotta give him props for getting all the way to the end. Because it was a rough time in the comic book business. In fact, there are very few times you can look at during the 80s or 90s and not refer to them as rough.
Right.
But the fact that they got every single episode adapted into a comic book, it was a huge achievement.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably says a lot about how many people were buying them. You know? These days, a run like that would be impossible.
Mm-hmm.
You could never set out to do one episode per issue for 36 issues. And I'm also glad that they didn't wait until Macross ended to start the next thing. All three were running simultaneously.
Right, mm-hmm. Yes.
But that was the era before I got into it. That was the 80s. And in the 90s, the license moved over to Malibu Comics.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically the Eternity imprint of Malibu Comics.
I remember that, yeah.
And a couple of years, I think, after they started running that, I got in doing Lensman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The adaptation of the anime film for Lensman. And that moved me into a sort of short list of people they knew who could do anime-style comics whenever they had an adaptation to publish. And Lensman was with me for about a year and a half. And that kind of petered out, and then they moved me over to Captain Harlock. Which was a great experience. Ben Dunn was on it before me, and I took it over, I think, with issue 10 or 11, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that went for a good year before it was scuttled from the outside, which is an interesting story, which I could tell.
Feel free.
If you're interested. Malibu had licensed Captain Harlock from sort of a little hole-in-the-wall company called Coral Pictures.
Okay.
And Coral had picked up four episodes of the TV series previously released by a company called Ziv International.
Hmm.
They put them out on two VHS tapes, and I think they were the first four episodes of Space Pirate. The first two were dubbed pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
The second two were dubbed for comedy.
What the?
Yeah. What the? Exactly. It's impossible to describe. You just have to watch it, but it's ridiculous. And Coral Pictures said they had the rights to grant Malibu, you know, comic book permission.
Mm-hmm.
And so Malibu worked with Coral for maybe 2 years before it turned out that Coral was a pirate operation. Selling a space pirate, which they didn't actually have the rights to.
Yeah, doesn't that cancel each other out and it makes it legit?
But one day, Malibu Comics got a letter from Toei saying that you're publishing our character without permission. And they proved that Coral was not who they said they were. And that was the end of that. So I needed something else to do as a new project, and I finally gave in and did Robotech.
Mm-hmm.
They'd been asking me for a while if I would do one, because it was like printing money. There was a built-in audience, and every issue sold at a minimum that was healthy. And so they wanted to publish as many different Robotech comics as they could. And when it finally became obvious that I was going to have to give up and do one.
Yeah. I'm not sure I like that phrase. Yeah.
Well, this was during one of my down periods when I wasn't really liking it anymore. And my answer to them was, okay, as long as I can choose the context in which to do it. Hmm. You know, the frame of the story. Mm-hmm. Like they were happy to let me place it anywhere in the saga I wanted to. And I thought the one part of the saga that had always been underserved was Mos Vita. And so I thought, well, it might be kind of cool to do a run-up to Mos Vita. And the name I came up with for it was Invid War. Mm-hmm. And it was originally going to be, I think, 6 issues. And it would be the story of the Invid invasion of Earth prior to what happens in the TV series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Around what year was this that you came aboard?
This probably would have been 93. Mm-hmm. 93, 94. So we did the 6 issues, and mm-hmm. they went well. And they said, okay, let's renew you for another 6.
And what was your initial reaction to that?
My initial reaction was I needed the money, so.
Fair enough.
Yep. And I was getting to draw robots that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by this time I had the Valkyrie and the Legios completely memorized. I still held up the toy in one hand and drew with the other.
Mm-hmm. That'd be the Gakken toy?
Yes, absolutely.
Nice.
35 scale, right?
If you say so.
It's about this big.
Yeah, it was a healthy size. I was having a decent enough time with it, and it was going well enough, so I said, sure, let's do another 6.
Mm.
And that did well, so they said, okay, let's do another 6. And by that time, I was burning out a little bit.
Mm.
And I said, all right, 6 more, and then I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
So we got all the way to issue 18 and concluded it. We got to the end of Mos Vita. We had ended up leading into it and then telling a parallel story that matched and led up to the end of the series. And then they wanted to do a new series to keep it running.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend Bruce Lewis took over and renamed it Invid War Aftermath,
mm-hmm.
and caused a shitstorm. Because his style was completely different from anything else that had ever been seen in a Robotech comic.
Right.
And he treated the characters differently and apparently pissed off a lot of readers and got some fantastic hate mail for it. The favorite one was, I hate your Robotech comic so much that I put it on the shelf away from my other Robotech comics.
That's nasty.
That's pretty mean. That's harsh.
So was there anything that you contributed in that comic book run that's considered canon, or was it all wiped out?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't really follow what happened afterward, but on more than one occasion, somebody has come up to me and said, I love the comics you did in Robotech. You know, those Invid War comics were so great. And they were really important to me as a youngster growing up. And I thought, well, okay. That's all you. If they were important to you, then they spoke to you in a way that didn't really have much to do with me, because I was just drawing within the time frame that personally interested me, and I was getting to draw the robots that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe something got communicated by accident through that.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, I was always happy to hear that I'd touched another life and helped them get through the day. And the denouement to all that is that I was in-house at Malibu by the time it wrapped up. Mm-hmm. I was working on staff.
Mm-hmm.
And they had another series called Return to Macross, which they asked me to fill in on,
mm-hmm.
for, I think, 2 or 3 issues. So that pulled me back in for a little while. And it was a prelude to the TV series, so it was kind of interesting. And that was that. That was my last contact with Robotech.
Mm-hmm. Around what year was that?
That would have led into 94, I think.
Right. So it's that 2 to 3 year
right
period in there that you're most heavily involved.
Yeah.
Okay. No, I just it's interesting because among either whether it be Robotech or Macross fandom, the one thing you don't really hear is stuff described with I don't want to say dispassionately, but yeah, it was a paycheck, I did it. You know, kind of used to two opposite ends of the spectrum.
Well, the thing was so big and was so self-propelled, it didn't really seem like something that I could get my teeth into creatively.
Right.
Because no matter how much I did with it, it would have to end at a certain way in a certain point.
I mean, having said that, they let you kind of pick the period you wanted and go with the part of the saga you liked and the robots you liked. That sounds to me like there was at least a fair bit of creative freedom, at least in the setting. Was there anything in the way of restrictions?
No, none at all. None at all. They basically trusted everybody they hired to do well by the property. And I think they picked people who were at least qualified to do what they wanted them to do.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the choices I think were a little odd. There was an artist named Barry Blair that they brought in from another line of the company called Aircell Comics. And I seem to remember meeting him and thinking, nice guy, I wish he drew better. Because it reminded me a lot of the original Kimiko comics that should have been better than they were.
Right.
For what they were trying to accomplish.
Did you have any... Did you have a hand in the Robotech swimsuit issues at all?
No. No, I didn't.
Do you know why they exist?
Well, wasn't that the trend like in the early 90s? Because Marvel did their swimsuit pinup issues in the early 90s.
Yeah, a lot was going on like during like, Witchblade and all that. Like,
I think we know why they exist. We know who they're made for.
Other people can have a hand in them.
Yeah.
That's one way of putting it.
Okay, but we're talking about Britai and Speedos. So are we talking about?
That was a drawing like that was probably somebody just trying to play it for laughs. But obviously they want to sell you pictures of girls in bikinis. For the all too obvious reasons.
Adrian, I'm picking up some deep mental anguish from way back here. Is there anything you've obviously seen this issue. Do you own the issue in
question? No, I didn't own it. I walked out of the comic book store that day.
In protest.
Yeah.
His life suddenly wasn't worth living anymore.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, at the time I was working at Malibu, I saw a lot of goofy decisions. At one point, I was in a discussion with an editor, and he told me, Tim, there are two things that are always going to sell a cover, or always going to sell a comic book. You can put two things on the cover, a naked woman or an explosion. And I thought, wow, I'll draw a naked woman exploding and sell a million copies. But that kind of mentality is what explains that entire enterprise.
And the entire series of Transformers films. But I've got to ask Tim, because I know you're just saying you picked that particular pre-Mospita era to work with. Overall, Robotech in general, I mean, is there a particular mecha that you're fond of? Not necessarily that you can draw the easiest, but that personally, you know,
the Valkyrie, of course, is what catches everybody in the beginning. You know, there's a reason I built all those silly model kits and bought the transforming Takatoku toy that had been repackaged by Matchbox. Is that a geeky enough reference?
Yeah.
Am I in the club?
Yeah.
Right. You're in the den right now. Right? We'll show you the storeroom later.
All right. You know, there's just something about that mecha that... It's unexplainable. I'm struggling for words to explain it. It's just, it's so perfectly designed that it sells itself.
Yeah. I don't think anyone would disagree with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they can even rebrand it as a Transformer and it's still...
Yeah.
I bought that toy. But yeah, no, I'd probably have to go with you on that.
Yeah. But in terms of actual, like, overall design, a design sensibility that infuses an entire anime show, I thought Mospita was a little better, simply because it seemed to be more unified. Whereas in Macross, you've got the Valkyries, and then you've got the Destroids, and then you've got the enemy mecha, and they all were a little scrambled. You know, you look around in each line, and you see stuff that looks kind of shoehorned in. And when you stand it up next to the other stuff, it doesn't always seem like it came out of the same brain.
Right.
But Mospita was different. It I think it had a single mecha designer, Aramaki, right?
Well, that was Kakinuma as well.
Okay.
Kakinuma did more of the Invid, though. That's where you can see the night and day difference between the two.
Yeah, obviously it's best to have two different sensibilities on either side of a story, good and bad. But I think within a body of work meant to have originated from one side, it's got to be unified. And I think Mospita had that nailed down a little better than Macross did.
Interesting. All right. So, John, was there anything you wanted to throw in regarding the comics at all? Pretty much monopolized the conversation on this side of the couch.
Well, he's the expert. I didn't really, because I grew up, like, half my childhood was in South America, and the other half was in the UK.
Oh, right. Yeah,
well, the streets of the UK. And we didn't get the Robotech comics either. We had to go to... I only saw them in one shop. In one comic shop in, like, the north of England. And I bought the cheapest one, which was... was there a company called Atlantic Comics as well?
Antarctic Press.
Antarctic Press. Yeah. So, yeah. So that was like in the later 90s, maybe. No?
Antarctic, I think, is still together. They're still running now. And I am pretty sure they're the ones who currently have the license for Robotech.
Still?
No, it's DC, but they're not doing anything with it. The last people to release anything was DC, and that was Prelude to the Shadow Chronicles.
Is that... something to do with the movie license being bought by Warner Brothers, because DC is Warner Brothers, and therefore they want to make some tie-up if and when the movie comes along? Or...
No, that was done way before the movie announcement.
Oh, okay.
That was back before Shadow Chronicles was released by Funimation.
Well, they were still talking about the movie back then, weren't they? No, it doesn't matter. Okay. Anyway, I remember that the comic book that I had was just a bunch of people sitting around in a room.
So it was a talking about it was a swimsuit special. No, wait, what?
No, a bunch of people talking about Robotech in a room. Just like we are just now. The same.
But they were drawn.
They were drawn, yeah.
Okay.
And they were like, "Oh yeah, that was pretty tough, wasn't it?"
Okay.
It was. They weren't like in uniform. They didn't seem to be soldiers or anything. It was just a bunch of people. And every so often, you had flashbacks to like Zentradi and stuff. And I remember that one. I probably still got it somewhere. It's called Robotech Issue Zero or something. They like putting issue zeros.
Yeah, it's like having an extra number one,
right?
Yeah.
And at the back, this was the most interesting part. They had a couple of columns. And some of them described the editing process of, you know, kind of like your Robotech Art 3 book.
Right.
The editing process of mixing Macross, or rather,
right.
editing well, Macross into Robotech.
Well, Robotech Art 3 describes the utter breakdown in communications and failure of a really expensive sequel. But I get where you're going at.
Yeah. Well... It's from Masek's point of view.
Yeah, it's a fascinating read, but yeah.
Speaking of Masek, when you were working on these comics, was he involved at any point, or you guys had free reign?
No, he was long gone by that time. In fact, Harmony Gold didn't really care what was going on with the comics. They just wanted the name to be out there.
Yeah.
So anybody who thought there was an overriding vision that kept it all on the straight and narrow, mm-hmm. sorry to disillusion you, but it was mostly just the individual efforts of people like me who had some respect for it and wanted to do well by it, or in some cases would just have a personal standard of excellence to live up to.
That would be the golden years of Robotech.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as we all know, Carl Masek was this visionary that had a little event dedicated to him recently, which I know you went to, Tim.
That's right. It was the documentary about the making of Robotech, which painted Carl in big red rosy colors.
So can you give us a little background? I mean, one of the things we normally do on this cast is cover Japan-only events. So as an event, a tangentially, at least, related event that happened outside of Japan, I was kind of fascinated. Can you just give me the rundown, like the basic setup? Where was it held? Like,
well, Harmony Gold is in Hollywood, and I live in Burbank, which is maybe a 20-minute drive away. And I heard this was going to be screened at the Harmony Gold Theater, which is a really nice screening room, which I'm sure they rent out to everybody because it's got a fantastic projection system and a great sound system. Mm-hmm. It is a real theater in the middle of this blocky building they have on Sunset Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And they also have two, I think, 5-foot-tall Valkyrie figures up on their stage. Yeah,
yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're the... scaled up superposables that were somehow illegally taken from an amateur artist here and mass produced outside of Japan.
Right, they were like Wonderfist kits or something.
Yeah, they're Wonderfist kits that somehow ended up in.
Do you think that guy knows? We should tell him. We could probably track him down.
He probably knows.
Well, through the entire film, we had these two Valkyries on stage pointing guns at us. So we had no choice but to enjoy it, I guess. The whole thing was about an hour, maybe a little more.
Basic Richie.
And it was a video blow up onto a large screen. And the director was there to introduce it, and several of the voice actors were in the audience. Mm-hmm. And they were also up on screen. The whole thing had been shot as a bonus for a DVD.
Right, yeah, that's the newest box set they're bringing out in that DVD.
Why do you say?
Well, because I bought it once and I don't intend to buy it again, but I hate having something missing from my collection, no matter what it is.
They release something after the Legacy DVD?
I'm not sure what they're calling this new box set, but you know, the big blue
this
one.
This A&E one, the one that they use a picture of Macross Frontier Alto to advertise.
Yes, that one. Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
But,
do you want
to
tell Big West, or should I?
But, it's for the yet another rehash of the DVD box set, basically.
Okay. Well, it was a series of on-camera interviews with the actors and people who worked on the show, all in loving tribute to Carl. And the more I learn about the guy, the more I like him. There was an interview he did on Anime News Network.
Yes. About a three-hour interview he did about 3 months before he died.
Yeah, and it was phenomenal.
It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah. I couldn't believe how many misconceptions I had about the guy. The fact alone that he helped to create the direct market for comic books that I and many, you know, several hundred of other artists benefited from, that alone earns him, you know, the right to slide on anything else. And the fact that he was involved in some motion picture production here and there. He was a central figure in the San Diego Comic-Con community. And I've been told since then that he was actually a lot more humble about what he did on Robotech than I gave him credit for. My biggest complaint about the entire operation was always the way they structured their production credits. in the opening title and closing title of every Robotech episode, it seemed like they went out of their way to ignore the original contributions of the people in Japan, you know, who created all the pieces that they put together into a different puzzle. And not knowing any better, I held Carl Masek personally responsible for the writing of those credits.
As I think most people still do, who don't know any better.
Only to find out much later that it was a decision made at a level much higher than him. And privately, he would tell people that he felt the same way about it. He started the entire production out of a love for the source material and a respect for anime that we all share. He felt the same way I think we did about the way it was essentially snubbed for the sake of some personal aggrandizement, maybe for the Agrama family or whatever. I mean, it's kind of irresponsible to speculate on the background and the reasons, but part of me was glad to finally see proof that he was more humble than I thought, and he was worthy of more respect than I had given him up to those years. But at the same time, that the documentary itself did nothing to redress my original grievance. almost no mention was made about the original source material. They would mention it by name, but they didn't say anything about when it was made, who made it, how it performed here, what it accomplished in terms of advancing the art form and the merchandising and basically creating everything that Harmony Gold would later benefit from. And it was a perfect opportunity to bring all that back to light. They wouldn't even have to spend a lot of time on it, just acknowledge the stuff. But that didn't happen in the film. And that tarnished it quite a bit for me.
Understandably.
And it was the point was made again very gratuitously at the very end when there were people on screen saying, you know, we've dug up this secret project that's been sitting around for many, many decades called Love Live Alive.
Love Live Alive.
Right.
Is it? Okay.
That must be the music video.
Yeah.
That was made in after the show. It's partially new, partially clip oriented. And apparently this thing has been sitting around waiting to be messed with. And so they're dragging it back into the editing studio and doing all the stuff they used to do. It's perfectly fine the way it is, you know, you don't have to mess around with it, and yet they're going to make it into another editorial plaything. So that just left me with a sour feeling walking out.
Was there, I mean, as far as the crowd reaction to that is concerned,
I don't think most of the crowd really cared.
Really?
About that particular aspect. They just liked seeing all their friends on screen. And of course, the actors are in the audience, so everybody else in the audience is going to give them props, you know, going to laugh at what they say, going to applaud at certain points. So I think most of the people were there for a different reason, you know, just to root for their pals, and I can respect that. But as somebody who's made a documentary myself and who knows a little bit about the larger context, I thought it was a missed opportunity.
No, I know what you mean. I mean, when I heard about that new project, I mean, for all its flaws, and I'm not going to recommend the Shadow Chronicles on a quality basis to people, but for all its flaws, I thought it potentially presented them with a fresh start. If they want to take, you know, the Robotech franchise in the US off in that direction, they'd set it up. It could be a TV series, it could be a movie series, but they'd done something relatively new, and I thought that was a positive step. And it would allow even old-time fans to clearly separate in their minds, you know, Macross is here, and then Robotech went over here. And this just seems like such a huge slide backwards compared to that. I just can't... It blows the mind that they're going back to those, you know, ripping up old footage and editing it like they did in the 80s.
Tim, did they actually use the phrase, this was Carl Masek's vision, this is what he would have wanted, in reference to Love, Live, Alive?
In reference to that particular project, I don't remember. But the word vision was used like every 15 seconds throughout the whole thing. So.
Because I understand like the whole story. Everyone knows the story, right? Mm. The requisites for television broadcast and syndication and all these changes had to be made to make the story more comprehensible or to make it more...
Well, it's debatable, but that's what they say.
That's what they say, yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Those requisites aren't there anymore. Right, you don't need to take a show from the 80s and redub it to somehow contrive it into this weird convoluted story anymore. I just don't get the necessity of it. Like, just like you said, Gwyn, you know, okay, you've got this kind of semi-reboot thing going, go with that. It seems like they're putting 1980s sensibilities on something where most of the audience has grown out of that kind of mindset, where it used to be required. It's not anymore. Everyone is much more savvy.
Hmm. Yeah, I just don't see who they're trying to appeal to with it.
And if they're trying to appeal to really, really minor, hardcore people, those are only in the couple of thousands at most.
Right, and they hit to a certain degree, I believe, with the Shadow Chronicles, a larger audience, because it sold quite well, as far as I'm aware. So, right, no, it's... I would have liked to have been at the event just to see all the old voices I grew up with.
Yeah. Know?
But
well, in some cases, you might not want to.
Really?
Yeah. These were actors chosen for how they sound rather than how they look.
Right, right.
And so... they haven't really maintained themselves for the sake of a camera. We'll just put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fair enough. I mean, I remember the voices, so... personally, it wouldn't be a big deal. It would have been nice, but okay. Any final words on that event, or...?
I know I wasn't the only one who had that reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I had at least one other friend who came there on his own,
mm-hmm.
and we commiserated afterward on Facebook, and he said, yeah, I felt the same way. Mm-hmm. It was a little creepy.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, we have a, I know I picked up on that on Facebook, and I threw it up on Macross World, and we ended up with quite a nice long thread of comments, so I'll forward that your way after.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that turned out.
How's that work?
But, look, one thing that we have tended to do, and this is only like the third episode. I've had time. Thank you, Renata, to get everyone together and do. Having said that, I wouldn't want to do Macross casts too often because there is a limited amount of material to cover. But we started because since 2007, there's been this incredible second bubble for the franchise with Frontier. And third. Modern bubble, okay? And, there's been events, there's been merchandise, there's been concerts, there's been, follow-up movies. So we have, to date, focused a little more on the newer stuff. So we plan to get around to the older stuff in due time. But I'm just curious, as someone who has a solid grounding in a lot of the anime classics, especially space opera and mecha, and yet, still keeps... as far as I'm aware, semi up to date on current happenings in the industry. What your take on Macross Frontier was?
I liked it quite a bit. I think they got they achieved a really nice balance of what made the original work, and also what makes some of today's anime work, and. I thought they had some of the best character design I've ever seen, at least within the last 10 years.
Oh, I'm glad you qualified.
Yeah, I wouldn't go all the way back to the previous decades, but...
I was going to call Mikimoto up and have him come home.
To be honest with you, I was never all that fond of Mikimoto.
Really?
Yeah. But
All right, we're escorting him off the premises.
I think that was mostly due to the rushed episodes of the original series that cut him down to his absolute bare, raw minimum.
Well, that was not Mickey Motto, though.
I always thought it was, so I, right. You know.
No, those were the ones that were farmed out to Korea.
Sure, sure. But even if a character design is interpreted badly, it tends to emphasize the negatives of a character design, which are inherent to it. If they weren't there, they couldn't be distorted in any way. So, I mean, it's kind of counterintuitive, but, you know, every time I get some animation back that I've storyboarded and they've misinterpreted something, I can always trace it back to a mistake that I made in what I did. It's always an exercise in trying to anticipate how they're going to interpret your drawing into finished animation.
It's funny you should mention that, and this might go on a little tangent, but I think it's very interesting, actually, because it reminded me of something.
Uh-huh.
If you look at character designs from the 90s, what? Just say it. I don't mind.
I was trying not to interrupt.
Go ahead. I've got my look.
Get back on track. Go for it.
Yeah, no, it's on track. Don't worry. Oh shit! What was I going to say?
Exactly. That's why I was singing.
If you look at animation designs from the 1990s, Japanese animation designs, they tend to be a lot more angular and a lot more simplified than those in the 80s. Like you can see a distinct change after the economic bubble burst. And I think that is very close to what you're describing. They're making it, they're keeping things simple and yet stylized so that other animators can really accurately reproduce them. And this is also the point, of course, when outsourcing becomes extremely important.
Prevalent.
You know, from the 90s. I mean, you know, all, not all, but most doga, most in between are done off-site now. They're all done, like in the Philippines, Malaysia, Singapore, or wherever. So, yeah, it's definitely, I would say, to try and get anyone to draw things on model, they have to make modifications to that model. So that's why you really don't see Mickey Motto doing any animation designs anymore. No, because he did the original models, and someone made animation models.
Well, he does a cover art, basically.
Right. Well, is that any different?
He designed the original characters for Titania, and someone else did the animation models based on those character designs. So there's two sets, and it's the same if you go back to Macro 7. Which is 94.
Right.
He designed the original characters, but someone else, like Katsura Nantoka, something, designed the animation model characters.
But is this necessarily a particularly unusual way of doing things? I mean,
in the Captain Harlock OVA,
they did that, you know, for Matsumoto Leiji's designs. I know that as far back as the Rama OVAs, Takahashi only did the character designs, and then basically the animation, like character redesigner, came in and redid them in a form that better suited.
In terms of we're really going off on the tangent, in terms of Matsumoto and in terms of Takahashi, they were both manga artists. They weren't designing for animation, so that's already a different sense of sensibilities.
Interesting.
And Mikimoto is not primarily a manga artist, and those designs were not made for mangas. They were designed for animation.
Mm-hmm.
So Hikaru and Minmei and Misa were designed for animation, but like, if you look at those designs, only he can draw them on model 100%.
Mm.
And you know the episodes in which he was the keyframe artist.
Mm.
Right? So, I think, Tim, what you're getting at is actually quite a very interesting theme within the topic of Japanese animation that I think has developed a lot over the past 20 years. And today it's one of the reasons why, actually, I feel that a lot of
character designs look so similar, really.
Well, remember, too, that quality control was always a function of how much time and money you had, mm-hmm. and the size of the talent pool that was available to you. Just about every anime show from the early 80s has its rough episodes, mm-hmm. because they had to be put together in a hurry by another studio that's outside the inner circle, mm-hmm. Just to keep the damn thing on schedule. And so they had no choice but to accept those really super rough episodes and just get them on the air because they're done. It took a while for the talent pool to get large enough and skilled enough that you didn't have to make that compromise anymore. And at the same time, in parallel to that, character design reached a point where it could be institutionalized and simplified.
Right.
So it was harder to misinterpret.
Yes. Exactly.
Mm. So and so you can look at the 80s, especially the early 80s, as the learning curve for right. the entire industry.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Totally. But we're missing the overarching most important point here, to get back to what you're saying, Tim, which is, are you a Ranka fan or a Cheryl fan?
God damn you. I swear to God.
Well, it gives me the creeps every time I see Ranka drawn in sexual poses and with tiny little bikinis, or, you know...
But you know they're the same age.
No, sorry. Not in my eyes.
The great thing is, right. the first time I saw, you know, the actual singers live, I realized that, like, you know, Megumi or Ranka, she's, like, slightly older than Maine, who sings for Cheryl, which is kind of interesting. But sorry, so you're saying...
Oh, is she?
Well, they draw Cheryl like an adult, and they draw Ranka like a child.
Right.
So yeah. I respond accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fair enough. So,
you were saying you like the character designs.
Yeah.
What did you think about how they chose to use these characters within the story, where you have Ranka, who would at times have animated hair, almost like kind of Preston Blair, mm-hmm. doing her hair was animated, something like you would see.
It's like for the first episode.
American animation.
Yeah.
And it happened mostly in the first episodes, but.
Well, again, there's a learning curve anytime you develop a new technique. Mm-hmm. You go in with guns blazing on your first episode, and then you pick up the pieces and try to keep everybody on track for the later ones. And eventually you get the technique down so that you can reliably use it to its greatest effect.
Yeah.
But expectations always start out high, and then get compromised down to what is practical.
And what about the Alto Mihail kind of connection, the boys' love element they put in there? Does that bother you with present-day anime? Do you accept it as, hey, that's what anime is right now, that's what's selling? Or is it...
It didn't bother me, just for the fact that this seemed like its own thing. I didn't really expect it to be a... a continuation of what I'd seen before. I went in thinking of it as one of the numerous Gundam spin-offs that was not set in the UC time frame. And so I could just look at it as its own thing. And then when the connections came up later in the show, I thought, okay, that's interesting. That makes it a little more fun. She's singing a Minmay song. We're seeing a repeat of some of the Zentradi conflict, but yeah. There was obviously a larger story going on. So these things read to me as tributes rather than attempts at continuity.
And do you think they did a good job with the tributes? Like, did it, the way they played it all out from the first episode to the last, was it too much? Not enough?
I think it was about the right balance. I was much more interested in what the larger story was, you know, and why music was so important to it, to the underlying plot, and what exactly was going on between the characters we were seeing on screen and the forces that were always off screen. So that to me was much more interesting than trying to put all the little puzzle pieces together backward through history.
So, just tying up the frontier topic, then, I suppose, Tim, I mean, I think, yeah, your opinion on it does echo a lot of what I hear among the fan community, in that as a kind of a tribute project, it definitely tends to hit all the right buttons,
mm-hmm.
and there's all these little in jokes, and you know, you've got the Valkyrie in the, you know, alto school, and you've got the nods to the music, and Ozma yells out the Firebomber songs from Macross 7 as attack names when he's going into battle. But overall, the story's new enough, and the characters are new enough, that it's kind of carved out its own niche. It's been, I'm not sure if you're aware, it's been unbelievably popular here, to a point that I think even the creators are a little caught off guard.
Well, they don't really know what to do when something goes past what they assume is going to be its shelf life.
Right.
If something sells out, it's my understanding that usually they're just happy that it sold out.
Yeah.
But they're, whereas in America, the very next thought would be, how do we continue this?
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese thought seems to be, woo, we made it. Let's move on to something else now.
Right. Right. No, that's definitely a good point.
Well, they didn't make those movies, though.
Right.
I mean, that's...
that's par for the course.
For not necessarily.
Popular Japanese anime.
Not necessarily. Not unless something is quite popular.
Not necessarily that's, new.
Well, Frontier is quite popular.
Right, Chaos, but that's what I mean.
Quite popular.
But not necessarily new content movies, though. I mean, compilation movies, yes. But all new content, you're mostly limited generally to the Shonen Jump kind of properties where they do a...
Oh, it's just a rehash.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. But
well, the first Frontier movie was a rehash.
It was, yes, a large portion.
Well, like I said, I think that's just to buy time for the real movie.
Right. And there's a lot of precedent for that, too.
Yeah.
There have been plenty of rehash movies in anime history.
Mm.
Going all the way back to Yamato, and also to the various manga Matsuris,
mm-hmm.
you know, the film festival anthologies that where movies were basically just remade TV episodes.
Mm. Well, bringing it once again into kind of a Yamato / Macross connection, Renato, I know you had a question you want to throw out.
Right, because as you were telling us during the Carl Masek documentary, he was hailed as like almost the messiah of anime fandom, and he was touted almost as being the one who brought
anime to the US, pretty much,
into,
right?
Into yeah. the US, to the mm-hmm. masses.
I'd like to qualify this one other way.
Yeah.
This is how I explained it to my wife.
Okay.
When I got back from the screening and wanted to explain it to her. She works in TV, so I had to couch it in terms she would understand.
Right.
And that was, imagine that you have a favorite TV show that goes to another country, let's say Egypt, just to grab one out of the air. And the guy who localizes it, well, let me back up. It does really well. It makes a huge splash there, and it opens up a market for, you know, a new kind of entertainment. But the guy who localized it takes all the credit.
Yeah.
How would that make you feel?
Right.
That's the impression this movie gives.
Yes.
Okay.
So, right, with that,
mm-hmm.
Carl Masek didn't, in your view, bring everything of anime to the West. There was, of course, Speed Racer. There was, of course, Astro Boy. And there was, of course, Yamato. In Star Blazers form.
That's right. It would have been nice if they had spent 30 seconds reviewing the history of other shows that had mm-hmm. preceded Robotech instead of just wiping them all away with a statement that they were for kids.
Right.
They were kid stuff and they were dumbed down, which was definitely not the case in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to stand up in the theater at that point and shout Star Blazers.
Right.
But
they would have thrown you out.
I don't think anybody would have even known what I said.
Oh. Because they were preaching to the crowd, I guess.
Could be.
So with that connection...
I wanted to hear your views on like the original Yamato and Macross, and if you thought that there was any kind of creative flow between those two shows, because the creators of the original Macross project, what went on to become Macross, mm-hmm. were big fans of Yamato, and as it worked out...
Well, more
out,
than that, they were veterans of Yamato. They worked on it.
Well, yes, right, but, like, as I'm going to qualify just now.
Okay.
Like, the main... Like, Kawamori would... Mm-hmm. People generally agree that he's the guy that came up with the main concepts, right? So he was a big fan of Yamato, and he went over to Studio Nue
mm-hmm.
To meet the people who worked on it, and he made a rapport with them. He eventually became part of that company, and they were pushing lots of projects, and eventually they got their own project on the air, which became Macross, and it all got brought right back to the starting point when it turned out that Noboru Ishiguro was going to be the director,
mm-hmm.
who was also the director for Yamato. So there is a kind of a lineage there, and I was wondering how you view that sort of evolution between the... I mean, do you think that Ishiguro had some concepts in Yamato which he fully realized in Macross, because I think I can make that connection with the way that Kawamori handles certain ideas in Macross and then realize mm-hmm. them in later shows, even those which are not related to
Macross. Well, every show does build on what came before.
Right.
And the big breakthrough with Yamato was to create the and perfect the technique of animating science fiction with some reality to it.
Yes.
Prior to that, there had been science fiction shows, but they were mostly in the super robot realm,
mm-hmm.
or the realm not bound by physics. And they consciously tried to get away from that with Yamato. Most of them, including Ishiguro, thought, this is the only chance we're going to get to do science fiction right in anime. Mm-hmm. None of them expected it to become a franchise. So they basically made their own little wish list of everything they would want to see in a science fiction show. And one of those things was physical reality. Ishiguro, in particular, had to retrain a lot of outmoded thinking
mm-hmm.
that came with a talent pool that had only ever done shows for little kids.
Right. Like the way that explosions work in a space vacuum.
Yep,
like that.
That's the simplest example.
Yes, yeah.
He came up on reading science fiction, and he had an appreciation for the craft of writing it and the science part of it. And he had a hell of a time re-educating animators to deliver what he was looking for. He ended up doing a lot of their work for them and came close to walking off the show several times because of the workload. But his biggest ally was Studio Nui. Because they were from the same background. They had
right.
the same appreciation yes. that he did. And they were also animals. If you asked for one drawing of something, they would give you six. And they ended up just delivering so much more than was expected that he vowed from then on he would make them his first choice of anything, you know, going forward if they ever got to work on SF again. So Yamato is what created that relationship that allowed Macross to thrive. And also all the techniques that Macross was able to adopt and advance.
Right.
From the big billowy, cloudy explosions in Yamato came the spherical explosions in mm-hmm. Macross. You know, one kind of built on the other. And the spherical explosions were done mainly for sake of time and production because they were easy to animate, but it also took the thinking that if you're in zero G or, you know, high level altitude, every particle in that explosion is going to expand at equal speed,
right.
and create a sphere. And so it was that kind of thinking that helped to give Macross its own unique style at the time. And that was just one of hundreds of things that made it what it was.
One final completely non-Macross thing I'll ask you as briefly as possible, Tim, and that is, I don't think it's any secret that you're out here for the premiere of Yamato Resurrection Director's Cut.
Right.
And we went and saw that.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'll be seeing it again tomorrow night.
Right. Just in a nutshell, your impression.
It's the movie they should have made 2 years ago.
Bingo.
Yes.
Well, is there any reason why that cut got released and this one didn't?
Nishizaki, right. I think, is the primary reason.
I mean, that's the reason why all these Yamato projects are moving forward now, right?
Well, each one has its own story. In this particular case, this was something that he had spent about 17 years brewing over in his mind. And by the time it went into production, he had very specific demands and very specific ideas about what he wanted it to be. And some of those ideas moved away from what everybody else wanted, where he tried to push it in new directions that weren't entirely successful. One example was changing the entire sound effects library. In the eyes and ears of everyone else, that was a decision that made no sense. Because in every anime series, your sound effects library is basically another character. And if you swap that out, you're losing a really important character that infuses an entire show. Another example of that was when Armored Trooper Votoms came out with a series called The Paleson Files.
Right.
And the entire sound effects library was ditched for no good reason. And it ended up feeling like an imposter. And Yamato Resurrection was great to look at, and it was a good story, and it was space opera done the way it should be. But if you remove that part of the soundtrack and replace it with something else, it's a substitute, and it can only ever be compared to what came before. And so I think that was a missed call, because if the original sound effects had been in there, the ones we all remembered from the classic, this would have never been an issue. But it became an issue, even though it shouldn't have, and it took a little over 2 years to fix it, but I'm glad they did, and I was glad to find out in retrospect that it wasn't just us feeling like it was a mistake. There were people on the inside who had the same feeling.
So in a nutshell, you think this cut or this edit is the way it should have ideally
been released? Well, story-wise, it's got a different ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be honest, I like the original ending a little better.
Really?
For the same reason that the Japanese fans did.
Oh, okay. I'll disagree with you on that one. But...
Well, let me elaborate a little bit. Yamato has always had a positive vibe to it, that we will conquer all. We will do everything necessary to save the Earth, and the Earth will be saved. And so when Japanese fans are given a chance to look at the two endings side by side, they felt that it was proper to maintain that part of the story. So they voted overwhelmingly to keep the positive ending. This version has the negative ending, and it throws a very different spin on the story. I think it's equally valid in terms of storytelling, and it's intriguing as hell. It makes me want to see what happens next.
Well, that's the way I was approaching it, in that I didn't find it that negative, in that it opened the door for a much more logical continuation.
Right.
Which could have gone off in a new direction.
And it is a way to keep the franchise from being repetitive. The last thing you want is a retread of an old story. You want something new. You want to put new challenges in the path of your characters to see how they grow and respond. But just from a pure aesthetic and satisfaction level, I do like seeing that gigantic wave motion blast at the end of the original. And when I heard that gigantic, you know, huge thunderous wave motion gun go off in this version, which just about shook the theater, my next thought was, wow, I can't wait to get to the end and hear the giant one go off, you know, when they fire all six chambers at once.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to the end and, oh, yeah, that's not going to happen.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah. So that big emotional punch,
mm-hmm,
that is a part of every Yamato story, at the very end, you know, the giant release of energy that conquers all, was not in this, and that makes it a different kind of story.
Fair enough.
I hope they do a sequel.
Oh, hell yeah.
It still says end of part one at the end of it. And I have to be honest, if I was to choose which movie to sequelize, it would be the director's cut version.
Mm.
Just because there's a heavier story there to be dealt with.
If less naked Yuki.
Yeah, that was another one.
Yeah. But all right, we've pretty much run out of time here, so I think we'll call it a night. But I just wanted to thank you for dropping by. And any final comments?
I sure hope I have my voice back tomorrow.
And if people are looking to get in touch with you or see you online, is there any way they can find your work? Or
Starblazers.com.
Mm-hmm.
It is essentially an online museum for a space battleship Yamato. You can find out just about everything you want to know about the history of it. And you can also keep up on the latest news. And that's also where my comic book energy is going these days, in the form of ongoing webcomics that continue.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you again for coming. And we'll see you again in Tokyo in a couple of months.
And in early May. Yep. And I'd be happy to come back if you're looking to fill this slot again.
If we can swing it, definitely. All right. Well, thanks again. Alright, so that's about it for this episode. The next one will be coming up goodness knows when, but we're hoping to get, you know, some more people who are involved in the fan community and possibly a couple more special guests in the future ongoing.
And who knows, the VF4 might be out by then.
Hopefully.
Oh, I didn't talk about the Lancer 2 and the Ghost, but who cares, right?
But those aren't confirmed.
They are confirmed.
Are they?
Yes.
I don't know if they're confirmed.
Okay. He's lying.
Well, we're going to sign off, but in the meantime,
they're in the magazines.
Gentlemen, is there anywhere people can find you if they want to follow you, bug you, annoy you, tell you how great Robotech is? Adrian, I believe you have some kind of website, right?
Yeah. Website is tokyo-hunter.com, where you can rent. Website is tokyo-hunter.com, where you can purchase and request, most importantly, request items that you are missing out of your collection, so check it out and send me an email if you need something.
Right. And Richard?
I'm on Macross World. I'm on Robotech X, but basically I just troll that place. I'm on Anime Ski, but I'm not really sure how useful that place is. And I've got my Shakespeare blog, which no one cares about.
Wow. Well, yeah, I'm most easily found on the Macross World forums, on and off. Anyone wants to get in touch with me, drop me a PM. And Renato, where can you be found?
I'm on Macross World. I'm on Facebook now.
You sound so happy about that.
Why wouldn't I be? And I've been doing some stuff for JapanCinema.net.
Okay.
So if you want to check that out.
Nice. All right.
Oh, we didn't talk about the new face of Macross World.
No, we didn't, yeah, really. Yeah. No.
It looks good.
Yeah.
Although Renato couldn't see it for a while.
Yeah. Wow. And I don't know, at my office, I couldn't see it. And then when I went back home, it was okay. So maybe if I go back to my office next week, I'll be able to see it. Or maybe not, I don't know.
Well, I mean, they've contacted some of us to contribute.
To the news section.
I'm interested in contributing.
Yeah.
And they didn't ask me.
Because they know, you know, you're...
they trolling the bards over Robotech.
Oh, okay. They didn't want Shakespeare commentary on that.
Yeah, right. I saw you trolling this morning. You wrote something about some guy said, "Hey, I remember this anime. There was a red robot, and something happened." And then you sent them a link to like Shadow Chronicles or something. And then he said, "Oh, and I remembered another anime, which I think is about some white robot or something." And then you sent them a link to an IMDb article for like some pink Nikatsu film.
Yes, White Rose Campus, and then everybody gets raped.
Oh boy.
Wow, this is the best sign off ever.
Which, by the way, is a great movie, and you can see the highway that goes right by my house in it. White Rose Campus, and then Everybody Gets Raped.
Is the title of the film.
And that's also the plot description.
Nice. Okay, yes, some of us, for obvious reasons, were asked to contribute to the Macross world.
Speak for yourself. I don't see any bloody obvious reasons about it. But yeah.
have been asked if we would like to contribute, and I think we do plan on contributing.
Yeah,
I've already contributed.
Really?
Really? Yeah. Screw you! It's on the front page!
Oh, I'm sorry. So, Wonderfest is next week. I'll probably supply all Macross kit-related photos and anything that's there, because last time Tengen did a kind of it was Tengen and Iendo and Megumi.
Oh yeah, they did a little talk show,
which
we went to. But there's nothing scheduled.
There's nothing. We don't know. So, but I mean, Tengen will be lurking around, I'm sure.
Lurking.
And so I'll take pictures for that and anything that gets written up. But what's interesting is they finally updated the main page, and we were talking about earlier, and you know, maybe we don't. Like, you're saying the opposite of what I believe. You're saying it's.
Yeah, I actually kind of think it removes you from the community by an extra click. And the thing I love about the forums, well, it's the forums. Not so much. Well, I found the latest news to be fairly well covered, and it also kind of divorces the news from the feed, the talkback, in a way. Yeah. But you're saying you think it's the other way around.
Yeah, I think it's the other way around, and I think they're doing it to, because it's the main page, and we don't get a lot of new users there. So.
Well, Veef seems to think there's a whole slew of female readers we're alienating, right? I heard that conversation on someone's podcast, but anyway.
Anyway, so the forums have always been there, and the forums have kept themselves alive, fairly healthy. But, I mean, if you go in on, I mean, we know there's a guy here in Japan named John who has mentioned.
That, hey, John.
Yeah. John. He's a Macross fan. He's gone to the forums, but even he was like, oh, I don't know how to join in because everything's already started. So I think the new site will either announce something that happened in Japan or whether it's overseas, and then the discussion will then go to the forums, or they'll take somebody that said something in the forums, and if it's newsworthy, they'll put it on the front page.
Right.
For any person that just goes to the main page.
Which is, I think that's the way that TFW site does it. TFW 2005, the Transformers site.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying, I think that it's in the early stages and they launched it to get it out, and I think they're going to work on it as they go. I just hope it doesn't, like the old main page, eventually just stop getting updated.
Right.
But they have a lot more members working on it, so...
Right, yeah.
I think it'll
There's a couple of reviews I've got left to do, and I've got to say, by the way, going back a point, John is the luckiest son of a bitch in the world. He gets concert tickets for front rows. At the Yokohama event, he actually had a conversation with Megumi. Mm. Well, she was on stage, and he was in the front row, and I don't know why, but she was just having a chat with him.
Yeah, during the show.
During the show!
Like, on the big screen.
Wow. Yeah, she's just having a bit of back and forth with him, like... Some guys, what luck. You know, I'm jealous, John.
But says the guy who got into the Q&A the day of the that was Adrian.
No. Like, you don't understand. Like, he was speaking to Meg. Yeah.
Directly.
Okay.
A conversation, okay. You know, like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Was it Megumi or was it?
It was Megumi.
Okay, because I didn't remember if it was Megumi or...
No, if it was Aya, you would have killed him on the spot. But all right. So on that note, we'll be participating as much as we can with helping out with the news updates to the site. And Well, hopefully we can find a home for the podcast there, because Mega Upload's gone.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Mega Upload, send me a file.
So, all right. But
deposit on files.
On that note, we're getting the hell out of here. Say goodbye.
Yeah, I'm going to miss my train. Goodbye.
Adios.
Bye.
When Richard and Renato aren't doing the Macross podcast, you can find them over on Veef's show.
Yeah. Do not touch that because it's still recording.
Okay, let's talk shit about Gwyn.
All right. Oh, God. It'd be the death of us if we do that, because he's the one that's going to edit the damn thing.
I know. This is kind of funny because, like, no one can see what we're doing. So this is going to sound really stupid, actually.
Okay, go ahead.
How do you get the head out? Because I just can't. Because I'm moving it every which way, but it doesn't seem to want to.
Stop. Just stop.
Try teasing it.
I'm twisting, man. And I'm pulling. But there's no... I think there's a spring somewhere. You think it's in a ball joint? I think this Transformer's name is Grapple, by the way. Grapple. To make things even better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know you're going to do something with this, though, right? You're going to, like, push this.
I'm trying not to say anything.
Oh, hey! Hey, Gwyn's back. I got the head
stay
out.
Stay back.
It's okay. I got my head out.
You're going to have to listen to this whole section.
I can edit it into, like, an opening song.
Okay, why'd you bring Highlander?
I wanted to get Renato off my seat.
It worked.
Yeah, it worked. How's this for a weird-ass art book, though? How's it open?
So that looks nice.
Yeah.
Oh, the storyboards.
It's got storyboards and some design sketches.
Highlander, the search for vengeance. I'm searching for vengeance. Where is my vengeance? Have you seen my vengeance?
It's under the bed in the back room.
Oh.
But yeah, in the Japanese version, you got Yamadera in it.
Yamachan.
You got Hayashibara Megumi in it.
Oh, right. I remember you telling me. Spike, yeah, it's Highlander, Spike and Faye.
Yep. And swords and breasts. And the dude who directed Ninja Scroll. Like, how did they go wrong with this 1900 yen collector's edition?
Because there's not many of you kind of anime fans that like that out there.
Dude, hey, Ninja Scroll was reissued as a, like, what, 20th anniversary, 10th anniversary edition?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, two discs.
And MD Geist got a director's cut like 25 years after that by Central Park Media. Not only was that, it was the official logo of Central Park Media. And where are they?
You know, I own a copy of that disc. Well, I'll get around to watching. I was going to do it today, but some dickhead wanted to record a podcast.